The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side. Happy 4th of July. This week we talk about Far From Home. Lot to talk about. We get into as much as we possibly can. We don't hit on everything, I'm sure, because I know there's stuff I still want to talk about. Do you agree with us? Do you not agree with us? What did we miss? What is your opinion of the movie? Let's keep this conversation going. Hit us up on Twitter at @brightside_chat. You know, tweet us while you're listening. Let's head on into the store. Boom! Happy 4th of July? I don't know.
Happy 4th, yeah.
How you doing? How was your 4th?
That was pretty good. Really uneventful, but it was pretty good. We saw Spider-Man this morning.
Biggest event was me coming through the door going boom.
That's right. It just shook me a little bit.
I don't wake you up.
Yeah.
So uneventful?
Well, yeah, I still have all my fingers, so.
There you go. Yeah, that's important.
That's good.
That's important. Yeah. Yeah, we just went over to Wayne's house and hung by the pool and then waited to come over and run into your store.
Awesome.
And yell boom.
And yell boom.
Been planning that boom all day.
I mean, as soon as I had TSA agents running all over the place.
Boom.
You can't say bomb in an airport.
Nope. No. Well, you can say boom.
Yeah.
So, this has been a pretty big week since last week's Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
We got a ton of tweets and a few of them. So, commenting on the podcast itself, which is great. That's what we want. And, Gregory Litchfield at Greg Litchfield. He came in with just one example of a star being the lead actor of two franchises, Chris Pratt, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Jurassic World. That being said, I'm sure Daisy Ridley would be fine at portraying Batgirl, but why does Hollywood keep casting English actors to play American characters? That's actually a good question. I don't know. Are they better actors?
Yeah.
I don't think they keep doing it. I just...
Well, I mean, they do it more than you think, because a lot of times you don't know it until you hear them speaking outside of their role.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, he's English?
Well,
they all seem to be able to pull off American accents very well. So
I wonder. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it has anything to do with money. Or, I don't know, maybe they work cheaper.
A lot of these guys are pretty high profile. I don't know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
A lot of them are pretty high profile guys.
That's a good question. But, I don't know if they all, I just think there's more people around the world with different accents than there are Americans. So, you know, cause I wonder how many times they're all like English. Maybe they're, cause I'm not good with accents. Maybe they're Australian too. And it's like, you know, they're from.
Well, the Hemsworths are Australian.
Exactly.
Right. So, yeah. And then.
Is it, what's Charlie Cox? He's not Australian.
I think English.
He's English.
I think he's English. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you got like Andrew Lincoln from The Walking Dead, who's English, and Christian Bale. You know,
yeah.
I mean, so many. Yes, yeah, really, a lot more than you think. Until
Well,
even Tom Holland. You know, we saw Spider-Man today.
Yeah,
Tom Holland is English. You know, so
yeah,
He does a better Queens accent than people from Queens. So
you know what's funny about that? So like, obviously, I'm up here in Boston, and people ridicule the Boston accent, and it's. And it's all people in Boston. Oh, that's the worst accent I've ever heard. Blah, blah. One time, Jen and I are down in Aruba, and we met this family, or this couple from Dorchester, right?
Yeah.
And their accent sounded like they were in a movie. It was that thick. And we were talking to, and I don't even want to do it, because I'll do a bad Boston accent, but it's like, but there are people with that thick of an accent around
there
here,
are.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny. When you see it in real life, you're like, wow.
But at least you're in Boston, surrounded by Boston accents. I'm in Houston.
Yeah.
So when mine comes out, it really stands out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's because you're in Houston. Up here. I blend in.
Yeah, you blend. You blend.
Jeremy tweeted, just finished it, enjoyed it, much better than season 2, talking about Jessica Jones. Let's see who else. Iowa Joe. Iowa Joe was the one that won last week with the Magdalene Visaggio answer. That was funny.
She popped up on my feed the other day, and I almost blocked her just to be funny.
Oh, really?
She would never know.
No, she wouldn't know. It's like I didn't even know she blocked us. It took who knows how long that's been going on. But I did talk to Ernie at Friendly Neighborhood, who knows her.
Oh yeah,
or is friendly with her, and he's been blocked as well by not by her, but by other people that are friends of his. And he'll find out that he gets blocked by them. And apparently, what he was explaining to me is sometimes you can block. There's different ways to block people, and you don't block an individual. Maybe you block a certain
topic
or something, and if we participated, we get lumped in with that. Or maybe one of our followers said something, so then that we get guilt by association. And a lot of times it's like if they're friends with you, you just tell them, like, oh, sorry about that. Then they manually unblock you. And I'm like –
So we got chain blocked.
Apparently. Hey, look at us. We're in a chain.
I know, right?
Going with the plus on that.
That's right.
Dr. Joe, listening to John's recommendation of Canto is definitely selling me on it. He's yet to let me down. Looking forward to Friendly Comics run on Saturday to pick one up if there's any left. So he likes your recommendations.
Yeah, it's hashtag John doesn't let me down or something like that.
Yeah, is that one? Did that one have?
Something like that. I don't know. Anytime it says hashtag John something, I'm happy.
So. Yeah, exactly. Hashtag John sucks. There was one where was the one that he actually talked about the show. I can't find it. But he was Team John for something. I can't find it. Why can't I find it?
The art for Superman Year One.
That was a little while ago. Well. But anyways, yesterday
it wasn't important to you because it wasn't Team
no
DJ.
I had
That's
it here I don't know where it
down.
Went I don't know where it went yeah if I see it I'll if I find it I'll let you know. But we had one the other day from our rerun, our special edition Endgame review, which that wasn't even the hot one. I thought the night of was the one where it got really heated.
The fresh hot take from fresh out of the movie.
Right,
that was the,
where you hit me up.
That's where the fireworks were.
Yeah, that was a real boom.
Thicker than today.
Yeah, exactly. That was where you hit me upside the head with a frying pan with a. But anyways, so Loke at Lokadelic on Twitter says. Brightside Chat, re-listening to your Endgame episode where there were multiple times where I thought you guys were just going to cancel the podcast arguing about the movie. Haha, I loved it. Great job, boys. Hopefully you get a Far From Home episode soon. And, that's what we're doing right now.
I would venture to say without ruining anything that there are not going to be as many fireworks today.
You know, so you've only seen it once. I've seen it twice.
Oh, I say it's only been out for a day and a half.
Right.
But.
So I saw it back-to-back nights. I saw it with Joe on opening night, and then I saw it with Jen and Meg last night. After the first time, I'll just give you my quick opinion. I was like, that was a good movie. I really liked that. And driving home, I was like, you know what? I don't even care if John doesn't like it. I'm like, I feel that good about the movie. That was just a good movie, you know? It was a good movie. I didn't think it was a great movie. I didn't think this, that. I saw it last night, and we'll get way into this later on reasons why. And I was like, driving home, oh, my God, he better like this movie. we're going to have words.
Now I have to change my opinion just to make it more fun to listen to this podcast.
No, we don't do that.
I'm going to come up with a whole bunch of things that I didn't like we can have sparks.
I actually have a few myself, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was funny how, like, seeing it the second time, I just got more attached to it. So then I would just get more angry if you didn't like it.
I'm already in trouble.
Right. you better like it.
I haven't even talked yet.
Well, I think you've...
You know me that well that...
But you know what?
You know I'm going to have something to say.
I think you've evolved, though, since the start of this. Because There's things in this movie.
Look at me evolving.
Yeah, there's things in this movie. Well, you read that article, too. I think that article helped a lot. And it's like, there's things in this movie, like... I can't even watch Endgame anymore every time. I saw. Did you see Endgame again, by the way?
No, I haven't had a chance, I have not had a chance.
And that scene comes up where his daughter comes out with the helmet on, and I'm like, oh, geez, it was in the garage. How could that be in the garage? But I crack up. I'm like, I can't wait. But, yeah, I saw Endgame, and that was – the movie itself, it was so much fun to watch again. It's been over a month since I've seen it. And then to be able to sit fresh and watch it again, you still get emotional. It was, I mean, it's still that emotional roller coaster. And the trail, the extra stuff was, it was worth it. It was, you know. Yeah.
I still want to try to get in
now that
to see it again, but I don't know if I'll be able. I don't know if I'll have time.
Yeah, it's the one of the end credit scenes is. Basically, it's literally the opening of Far From Home. It's So it that's not a spoiler or anything. It's like if you haven't seen it, you don't know what that is. If you have seen it, it doesn't ruin anything. It's just the opening,
right?
So yeah, but that was good. It was a lot of fun. What else? What were we talking about? I don't know.
Tweets. You were reading tweets.
Yeah, that was the last one, and I haven't seen the Dr. Joe. What do you have anything? What do you got for news? I have a few things. I wonder if they coincide.
Yeah, a couple things. So, the biggest one I think is I saw that Netflix has ordered a Sandman TV series.
Yes, I heard
that. Written by Neil Gaiman and David Goyer. So of course Neil Gaiman wrote and created Sandman, and to have him on board as a writer, I think is going to make all the difference. With whether this is going to be a good adaptation or not. You know, Sandman universe is extremely rich. And according to this report, I mean, just the headline alone says, you know, huge price tag attached. So it doesn't seem like Netflix is sparing any expense with this. Like, I think they're going to go very deep into this. You know, again, this is the type of world. I talked about it a few weeks ago with Amazon, and they're doing like the Wheel of Time and Lord of the Rings, and you know, everybody's looking for their quote unquote Game of Thrones. And you know, Netflix has Stranger Things, of course, which is a big hit, but you know, again, Sandman is rich enough that it could be something like that for them. It could keep people coming back for years. You know, Lucifer, you know, of course, is a character from Sandman.
Yep.
So I don't know how that would all play out, because obviously it's not going to be Tom Ellis. Although, wouldn't that be awesome if Tom Ellis hopped in to play Lucifer in the Sandman show?
Just pop in here and there. Yeah,
actually, now that I think about it, I mean, Netflix owns Lucifer, too, so it's not actually that far out of the realm of possibility.
Is it possible that's what, like, all of that stuff was in play? Like, that's why they did what they did?
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah, maybe so.
That would be a fun little universe going on right there.
It would.
Having
those
two things going. And the one thing I thought of with that, though, is, like you were saying about, like, it's such a rich character with so much to do. Our conversation last week, one of the things about Jessica Jones was it's a fairly new character and fairly...
Right, kind of untapped.
Yeah. And that seems to be where you have... That's like the sweet spot, I think, to me, because you don't get you have less of a chance of being ridiculed.
Sandman's going to come with a high level of scrutiny and expectation from fans.
That's what I mean. And it's like, whereas Jessica Jones, people were like, who? And then a lot of the people, myself included, saw the show and then backtracked and then learned. And it was fun doing it that way.
And not to diminish that character, because I'm sure that character had its fans and its following before Netflix, so I don't want to kind of downplay that character. But by and large, she wasn't super well-known or popular. Like I said, I live in comic books, and I wasn't really that knowledgeable or a big fan of her. So,
but we've referenced it many times in the past. Iron Man wasn't as big as what he turned out to be in the MCU.
Of course. Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like, that was another example of taking a lesser known character. He wasn't lesser known. That's not the right way to put it. But as popular of a character and creating. I mean, he's on par with Batman, Superman, Spider-Man now.
Now, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know if the readership is there, but the popularity of the image is there.
Right.
You know? So, and that's, and that helps because it wasn't a well-read character, as well a read right. character, so you don't get that scrutiny.
Right. So. Where I would, again, I would argue, like, Sandman doesn't have that, like, that huge mass market appeal
right.
either.
He might be on level with, like, an Iron Man.
But the fan base is like, diehard. You know, mm-hmm. like, the fan base itself, even though they may be smaller,
right.
Are going to be very invested in, you know, how this series turns out. But, you know, again, I think anytime you have the creator and the writer involved...
That's going to be...
You know, yeah. I mean, you can be relatively sure that the vision you're getting is the vision that the creator wants you to have. Well, you know,
if the creator is the creator, it's...
Well, right, that's what I'm saying.
It's, whatever we say, we're wrong.
Right.
It's like, well, he didn't do a good job with his own stuff. What?
Well, again, it's like I reference it every time I get a chance, you know, the people that say that George Lucas doesn't know how to make a Star Wars
right.
movie anymore.
it's like,
you know, he's the only one that knows, really,
right.
whether you like it or not,
yep.
he knows Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say he doesn't.
Wait, what? So. Episode 10 was in the snow globe?
It's like, right.
Oh, I guess that's what happens.
I guess, right. I guess that's what George Lucas wanted.
All right. You got anything else? What else?
So,
I got a couple.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it looks like the on-again, off-again Flash movie is back on again.
I read that. I'm not paying
also
a ton
rumors,
of attention.
Well, it's just rumors that, you know, the director of It is now has been attached to direct Flash. So, you know, I mean, I don't know what... I like It. You know, obviously, they're two completely different genres of movie, but... You know, it was a blockbuster, you know, maybe not on par with something like what Flash is going to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a relatively big-budget movie and, you know, had a lot of fan appeal. So, you know, obviously they're able to deal with, you know, some expectations within a well-known property. So, you know, I don't know. I've been on the fence about whether I wanted to see this Flash movie or not.
I do.
You know?
I do.
I mean, I'll see it. Again, like any of these things, if it comes out...
Right.
I'm going to go see it. But, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Ezra Miller's Flash to begin with. So, you know, if it didn't come, I wouldn't have missed it. But,
I don't think
you know,
we really got a fair
come,
shake at it. It's like, we don't exactly know where in his life he is. He seems to be fairly, like, new with the powers. It's so vague.
the problem is, well, again, and this is... You know, we could go off on a whole tangent on this, but where he seems to be in his life is where Wally should be getting his powers, not where
yeah.
Barry should be. You know, Barry was, you know, he was the adult. He was already working in the crime lab. Like, we don't know how he got his powers in the Snyderverse because he wasn't working in a crime lab. He didn't get that job till the end of Justice League. So we don't know how he became Flash. So there's lots of things that are up in the air.
That's what
with
I mean.
This. But he seems more to me like he'd be better suited as Wally West Flash, you know, the teenager,
yeah.
with the sense of humor and all that stuff, as opposed to, you know, Barry. So, you know, again, we'll see. You know, like I said, I've been on the fence about it, but I'm going to go see anything they do, I'm going to go watch. So there's no question about that. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I mean, like I said, I want to see it. I want them to make these movies. You know, the fact that they're having the issues they're having, I think is, it only brings negative attention to them. And then when the movie finally comes out, you're coming into it thinking, oh, well, what took them? This is why it took them. So, you know what I mean?
I guess the biggest issue I have with it is that, they seem to want to have, because this ties into the next story that I had, so I guess we'll just go right into this too. They seem to want to run two separate concurrent universes with their DC movies now. You know, they want to have the Matt Reeves Batman universe, which is not going to be tied to the Shazam, Wonder Woman, Aquaman universe at all. They're never going to cross. And the Flash would have to be part of the aqua, you know, the quote unquote Snyderverse version of the universe. So I guess, like, where are we moving forward? Like,
right.
At what point are these roads going to meet again, if they ever do? Well, because the next story is that I read they were developing a Teen Titans movie, and they wanted it to be part of the Matt Reeves, like,
right,
DC verse,
right.
And this is where Batgirl was supposed to tie in. You know, it was also right. with this Justice League movie. So Daisy Ridley, who knows? So I guess it's just, with all the troubles that DC has had getting viewership for their movies, is making it more confusing the right direction to go in?
Right. It's only, you know? Here's why it's confusing, is we're so spoiled nowadays with, I mean, you have, you know, obviously Far From Home, the 23rd in a 23rd right. movie tied in, that's tied into the first movie. It's, you know, so where that is so good, everything else pales in comparison. And you're like, wait a minute, you have two universes going on? That's not right. fair.
Well, again, it's not confusing to me or to you.
Right.
You know, or to, but
we,
to the
we
ma-
still want it all shared.
General, right, but also, though, to the general public, who is necessary to make these movies hit $1 billion, those are the ones that are getting, that'll be confused. You know,
right.
Your non-comic readers, non-comic diehard followers are the ones that are going to be confused. Because you're like, well, Batman was with Aquaman back in the Justice League, but
right.
now I have Aquaman, but Batman's over here, and he doesn't know who Aquaman is anymore. And,
oh.
you know, where is Shazam? Because he had Batman's Batarang, but he doesn't know Batman. And it's just confusing.
Right.
You know, because they have these things going on. And like I said, I just don't think, even if they don't mesh them all back together again, because they don't feel like they're ready to do the Justice League again.
What we got to do is we got to get a hold of DC. And
yeah,
you,
no,
you
call
and
call them up.
You and I will film an end credit scene. So after yeah. the movie, go to Brightside Chat, listen to the podcast. We'll explain all this to you.
Right. So, like
just
I said,
us
I just
waving. Hi. Yeah.
I just don't think the direction should be two separate universes.
No.
Well, I just think that's confusing. Because, like I said, I'd be excited for a Nightwing.
Oh, yeah.
Nightwing led Teen Titans movie with Batgirl and all this stuff. But again, is that going to tie into the Titans on DC Universe? So now we have three universes going on. So, you know, I don't know. I think they're just making it harder for themselves to get to the level that they want to get to.
Well, the other thing is we have enough trouble. We're already comparing DC to Marvel. But then, so DC's already competing with Marvel just in right. public opinion, right?
Right.
So now DC is apparently coming out with two universes. So not only is DC competing with Marvel, but it's also going to be competing with itself. Because
exactly.
people are going to be taking those two. I like this one better. And right. it's like, so one of them will end up being a quote-unquote failure. Because right. people will prefer the other one more, and it's like what I agree. Like I don't know.
Right, because at
I
a certain
like
point,
what they're doing,
at,
but.
Right at a certain point, one of the roads is doomed. Because let's say the Matt Reeves
Correct.
Side of the street takes off, and now they want to start bringing in Aquaman and Flash. Well, you can't bring in Jason Momoa or Ezra Miller. You have to recast, and you have
right.
to have so. That means that the other side of the road, it just dies because
right.
now we're going forward over here.
It's kind of similar to what they did with the TV shows. I understand that. They have their TV
yeah.
universe with, you know, the CW, and then
right.
they have their cinematic universe. Whereas Marvel, they try to incorporate everything and keep it. Even the Netflix
right.
has small tie-ins, little
right.
Little
even if they
threads.
Treat the Netflix, even if they treat Netflix like the redheaded stepchild,
yeah.
it's still part of the same universe.
Right.
But now over at DC, we've got like the multiverse. Like we've got Crisis on Infinite Earths going on with their movies, and I've read the comics forever, and they still confuse me. So
yeah,
what does that do for? Again, it just makes it. I just think they're digging themselves into a hole that it's going to be hard for them to dig themselves out of.
Right.
Because, I don't know. It's like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. you know, they've got my money no matter what. I'm going to go see it all.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Because the Joker is, like, in the third universe now going off. We don't know what he's doing. So,
yep.
I don't know. I really don't know.
It gives us content.
Yeah.
Gives
us more to argue about.
Yeah. Yeah, but we actually agree on that. So, oh, I have one. Marvel announcing the return of Marvel Zombies.
Yeah. Comics. So,
what do you got on that?
Well, nothing. Absolutely nothing. I mean, they had a teaser image, and right. That's it. All we know is something's coming in September. But what I thought the best part of that whole story was, I don't know if you saw the CNN article the next day.
Yeah, and it's illustrated by Inhyuk Lee. And
right, but the CNN article, the headline is, now that Marvel is finished with The Walking Dead, it's bringing the dead back with Marvel Zombies.
Right. And they redid that because the
They redid it.
They redid
right,
the article because it says just as Image Comics.
right. But it goes back to like the week before when, you know, they were signing petitions to get Netflix to cancel Good Omens, even though it was put out on Amazon Prime. And it's just like the next step in the evolution. Yeah. But your CNN, it's like, don't you have fact checkers? You don't have like interns over there, yeah, like checking your stories. It's like it's only CNN, you know.
But they're not in the comics business.
Well, I understand that, but that's where you have like, you know, fact checkers or somebody. I'm available. Like I'll read these articles beforehand if they want, and I'll fix it for them. But I don't know. I just thought that was great. Yeah. That, you know, I was laughing all week about the back and forth between Amazon Prime and Netflix and how they were joking back and forth with each other on Twitter. And then here we come along and this thing happens and it's like the exact same.
Right. Yeah. So
actually, I actually think I saved that in Twitter because I wanted to talk about that. But
did they? So you don't know a time frame?
Oh, no. September, I think, is what they said.
Really? That soon?
Yeah. Fall.
Oh,
so,
cool.
I mean, other than, yeah, there's been no, like, there's literally no information on it. We know there's a picture, and we know who the artist is for that cover, and that's it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I saw the picture that they had with, what was it, Deadpool, Wolverine,
oh, yeah,
Captain America.
Here's the tweet I was gonna read, so... this is by Tom Taylor on Twitter. It says, this isn't right. The truth is people petitioned Netflix to end Good Omens, and they said they would if Amazon ended Stranger Things. Amazon said they would if I ended The Walking Dead, and I said I would if Kirkman ended Deceased. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
So it's just like this round and round where everybody was canceling other companies' properties.
Yeah.
It just made me laugh. So.
That's funny. All right. You got any other news?
I had one last thing. Oh, just real quick, not really even news, but if you haven't kept up with it, Young Justice premiered back on DC Universe this week, so the first three episodes are up and available to watch.
Have you watched any yet?
Not yet.
I watched the first two.
Yeah, not yet.
It's good. Same old, same old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we talked about it before. I wasn't super into it. Before, I'm hoping it gets better with the second half because I wasn't super excited about what they were doing.
They got some
on that first half of the season. Definitely isn't season one and two. You know, it.
Well,
it seems to have gone downhill. So
I'll be honest.
Hopefully,
I think most even season one and two, I felt that by the end of it, that was seasons that at the end of it, you looked back and went, oh, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You need it to, I'm giving it a chance to play out to see if,
well,
like,
that's what I'm saying. Maybe by the end of, right. Maybe by the end of it.
Right.
You know, again, I'm going to watch it. There's no question about it, but I wasn't super happy with the first half of it. I just didn't think it lived up to all the hype. You know, you had gone basically from binging season one and two right into season three. I waited years for it, so my anticipation level was,
and I think
was
that,
pretty high.
I think that hurts it sometimes, too. That can hurt you, because you get there, and you're so excited, and you're like, huh?
Yeah, and I'm just like, that's not quite what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
But, like I said, we'll see. They got the whole second half of the season, so you know, you don't judge anything halfway through. You know, right. You got to see it all play out. So that's it. Yeah, I don't have anything else.
All right. So let's get into Far From Home then. We'll do some spoiler-free stuff before we get into the comic books.
All right.
All right. Here we go. Did you like it?
Eh.
You're funny.
I loved it. Yeah. Well, you know, I already told you we had to argue.
Yeah.
No, I loved it. I thought it was great. Just saw it this morning, so it's pretty fresh in my mind. I liked it more than Homecoming. I guess, is it a spoiler to say that the whole first half of the movie was very predictable because...
No, yes. Don't
say it. You
know
who Mysterio is?
Don't say it.
Well, that's all I said. You know who he is as a character, right?
That
can't be a spoiler to anybody.
Yes, it can. And I've had that conversation. So it's a spoiler, so let's keep it, and we'll talk about that in spoilers. I should have actually mentioned that before we started to you.
Well.
But yeah, I do. I like it. We'll get into where we rank it and stuff when we get to spoilers, because I'll have reasons why I'm ranking it higher and stuff, or lower or whatever. But yeah, I liked it a lot. I liked the pacing of it. I thought that it does start off a little bit slow, but then as it ramps up, I thought it ramped up really well. I didn't mind the pacing at all, and what you would consider slow, it actually was very entertaining anyways.
It was entertaining, yes.
You know, it wasn't full of action, but it was entertaining. And I liked everywhere, you know, obviously spoiler free, I like how they started. I liked every direction that they went in from Endgame. And I thought that the movie, like I said to one person who hadn't seen it yet, they asked me, is it like, which is it, the beginning or the end of, is it the end of one phase three, or is it, I'm like, actually you could say like it's literally both. It's the door into the next phase. And I just thought it was, you know, by the end of it, you're just, I don't know. Yeah. Do we know when the next Marvel movie comes out or what it is?
We don't know what it is. There's something on the books for May of next year.
But we don't know what.
But we don't know what it is. And at this point, I don't even know if May of next year is feasible.
That's what I thought.
Because I don't know what they can get ready.
Right.
By May of next year. The only thing that's even filming that I know of is Black Widow.
Black Widow, yeah.
Now, I would say Black Widow is probably on the low-key end as far as special effects and big budget goes. So, I mean, it's possible they film it in 12 weeks and get it done in 8 months, but I don't know, man. Movies just don't get finished that quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I don't think it's going to be super heavy, you know, special effects laden. It's going to be a lot more, you know, physical effects.
Yeah.
So maybe they can get it ready, but, I mean, nothing else, because they're not even filming yet. So to say it's going to be done in 10 months is,
I don't know,
just not possible.
I think our best bet for more Marvel content is going to be Disney Plus.
Oh, for sure.
And so if we're think like, I, you know, you usually you come out of these movies and you're like, what am I going to do? What's the next one? Like, usually we'd have maybe one in November. I think the Thor movies came out in November, right? Usually. But so we'd have one in November and then maybe one in February or March.
I think the last couple of years, July has been the last movie of the year. You know, like last year, the last movie was in July.
That was Ant-Man.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we didn't have anything until February.
And then we didn't have anything until Captain Marvel. Yeah. But the year...
Right.
But the year
and
before...
And I think this year it's kind of similar. We'll end in July and pick back up in May.
Right. But the year before, we had Black Panther in March. Or February, I think.
February,
yeah. And but before that, we had Ragnarok was in November, and then in July before that, we had I think that was
Far From
Homecoming,
right?
You know, so it's like we had a decent pacing there. I hope they get back to that. But
I think they will.
But I think with Disney Plus, I think we're going to have plenty of content.
Plenty of content
that's going to fill in blanks, and it's also going to raise more questions.
Right.
And then those will be answered in movies coming up. I actually just started, because of this, I just started Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the first two seasons back when they started. Then I just fell away from it. And now I'm just like, I'm just going to binge it and do the whole thing and right. get caught up. And that, you know.
I've tried a couple of times. It just doesn't grab me. Like, I've been through the first four seasons twice.
Oh, really?
I just really don't like it. You know, I hate to say it because I tried. I've tried to like it a few times, but just can't get into it for some reason. Yeah.
But so back to this, back to Far From Home. What'd you think of all of the this now? What'd you think of all the actors, characters?
Well, I think, at this point, Tom Holland is Spider-Man.
He's right? awesome. Yeah.
Like, he's awesome. You know, like, you know, we say that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark, or Chris Evans is Steve Rogers. But you know what? There's never been anything to compare him to either.
Right.
You know, at least, you know, in this case, there are two previous Spider-Mans that we can compare for reference. But I think Tom Holland just blows them both away. And that's not to take anything away from Toby or, you know, Garfield, because I think they were fine in the movies. But, I mean, Tom Holland is Peter Parker, and he is Spider-Man. Like, there's just no question about it. He's fantastic in the role. Now, he's not going to be able to continue to play a 16-year-old too much longer, because I think he's probably 18 or 19 now. I don't know where he's at.
They're going to have to age him.
He should have blipped, honestly, because...
yeah.
But, you know, like I said, he's perfect. Ned is, I mean, he's great.
Well, yeah, Ned's, that's a good,
you know,
it's a good character, but it's nothing really to compare him to.
No, nothing to compare. Now, here's the other thing, too, is like you had Flash, who didn't blip, right? So he's 5 years older than the rest of them.
Well, no.
He didn't blip. No.
I think Flash did.
No, because he was, because remember the scene on the plane where she says he blipped till he was really only 16 years old?
Yeah.
But he looks older because he...
Right.
Oh, no, you're right. He would have blipped. That makes him...
Right. It's...
That's right. His eye... Okay, you're right. Because I was going to say, he didn't look any older than the rest of them. He looked the same. Yeah. So...
There was a little bit really of confusion.
So really, out of that whole, so they went to the point in the beginning, and this isn't really a spoiler, but they went to that whole trouble in the beginning to kind of explain, to get everybody up to speed with, you know, the snap or the blip or whatever. But yet, then you only see one kid throughout the whole movie that was any older.
Well,
like everybody else was the same age. You know,
well, you don't know because we don't know the other characters.
Well, right,
some of
but
them might have
any,
been. But like,
well, right, but you don't see any of them.
Yeah, that was like, Brad Davis. He was a little kid, and now he's their age. So they used him as that example, but the rest of the supporting, like the background people, we don't know what they were in the last movie anyways.
No, but so, you didn't see anybody. You know, they made it seem like the grade was going to be comprised of...
We'll get into more of this in spoilers, because there was a couple of funny lines that are jokes that I don't want to ruin for people.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think this is spoilery, but...
No, no.
But again, just to get back to the characterization, you know, I mean, Flash didn't bother me as much this time around as he did in the first movie, because I guess I've become accustomed to him being Flash. I still don't accept that character as Flash Thompson, though, because it's just not... what we're used to seeing.
Well,
Flash.
This entire universe isn't what we're used to seeing.
Well, I mean, I think
from
he would have
May
been,
to MJ.
But he could have been a perfectly fine character, and he still could have been the same exact guy and been the same bully. Like, he could have been the exact same character. He just didn't need to be named Flash.
Right.
Like, he could have just been Bob, and it would have been fine. Like, the character is fine. It's just, I don't know. Even the name Flash was, it's like an athlete, right? It's
Well, he has the Flash Mob.
Well, I guess
on his, you know, whatever social media is, he runs.
Right? Maybe it's like Flash. Maybe it's like Flash Cards because he's really good with math. I don't know. Like I said, I don't have a problem with the character necessarily. I just wish he wasn't.
Yeah.
I just wish he wasn't Flash. He could have been anybody else, and he would have been fine.
So
go ahead.
I had said to Jen, like, I was talking about, like, Aunt May. Right. And I'm like, I'm not opposed to that portrayal of Aunt May, but I'm just not, like, that's one that has, you know, Aunt May has never looked like Marissa Tomei.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? What I had said to Jen is, like, the whole world has gone gaga over it because it's Marissa Tomei. And they're like,
right.
And they leaned into it in the first one with Tony Stark, like, this is your aunt? Like, hey, hey. And they leaned into it and everybody's okay with it. And that's
right,
fine.
But
it's like,
but at a
but
certain
that's
point,
not what Aunt May has ever looked like. Aunt May's right. always and looked at, like a grandmother.
And at a certain point, that age difference, like, Peter's 16, and she's, like, what, 45? Like, I don't
she's
know
like
how old
45,
she is.
45, 50, whatever 45, she 50. Is.
So he can't, Peter can't all of a sudden be 22 and have Aunt May be 69 or 70.
Right.
Because the math won't work out.
Right.
But, yeah, at a certain point, you know, she, Aunt, right, Aunt May was always
Aunt May was
elderly,
always the
right.
Like
your grandmother. Like
the grandmother that had, like the grandmother in the right. other cartoon that had Precious.
Right.
The cat, you know?
Yeah.
It was like she always had the white hair with the bun.
Right.
And it was like, that was Aunt May. And it's like, all the comics, that was Aunt May. And it's like, right. I'm not opposed to that. But, and then Jen's like, how do you have a problem with Aunt May? But she's like, but then, you know, what's her name? Zendaya is playing MJ. And
right.
she's like, she's not a redhead. I'm like, right. yeah, but nobody's gaga over that. And people actually, at the end of Homecoming, people were saying, like, the way they kind of wedged that in, like, oh, they call me MJ. Remember at the end of Homecoming? And
right.
it was like, and a lot of people, there was some backlash for that.
There was.
People were like, oh, well, that's going to be MJ? It's like, oh, I didn't. And it was more about how they wedged it in. And it wasn't.
Right.
But we'll, and I'll get into more of that. And I actually like the way they're developing that character. But we'll get into more of that in spoilers.
Right. I mean, I like them all as characters. I do think
yeah.
they've taken some liberties with the...
Yeah.
They've taken some liberties with the portrayals of the characters. And some people, you know, like I said, some people are going to like it and some people aren't, you know.
And I think Marvel... This is the difference. Marvel and DC. Marvel
right,
gets
Marvel
the breaks.
Marvel can get away with...
Yep.
Right.
They have
if
so
DC
much goodwill.
If DC had done the same thing...
Oh.
Like, if Al, you know, Matt Reeves is doing another Batman movie, right? If Alfred is played by, like, Brad Pitt, people are going to lose their minds, right?
Right.
Because, you know...
Well, actually, Brad Pitt's older now, so maybe
well,
that would... It'd be more like Chris Hemsworth.
Right, right,
like,
right.
You'd be like, wait a minute.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... But DC won't get that break, right? They're not...
No.
Nobody's going to give them that. But Marvel walks on water, you know... Right or wrong, you know, Marvel walks on water and they can really do whatever they want.
Make 23 great movies and you get a little leeway.
You're right. I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a little bit of a double standard going on with some of that stuff, you know. I mean, people were going a little bit crazy over, I don't know his real name, but Sir Jorah being cast as Bruce Wayne on the Titans show.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, 60-something years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, that had a little bit of backlash, too.
Without even seeing it.
Right. Right.
It's like, what'd you think of the special effects?
They're awesome.
The action. I thought...
Yeah, I mean...
We'll get into this. There was one scene I thought was... actually, there were two really good special effects scenes that I thought were just so much fun. Almost to the point where something we haven't seen before, I would say pretty close. Which it's hard to talk about without.
Yeah, I was just saying you have to bringing it up again.
Yeah,
when you can talk about it.
Oh yeah.
But, I mean, again, the special effects were great, but nothing special for a Marvel movie though. I mean,
no.
It's kind of what we're. I mean, it's what we expect from a Marvel movie. So, I mean, they were top notch, but. I mean, we wouldn't expect anything less than that,
right.
you know, from Marvel. So, I mean, I think they would... I don't want to say they were just fine, because, again, obviously they were great, but compared to all the other movies, they're just fine.
Yeah.
Like, they were just pretty much the same.
Speaking of special effects, did you see any of the minor backlash on Twitter about the deleted scene that was in the movie theater at the end of Endgame. And so what it was a Hulk deleted scene.
Something with the Hulk, I know, right. But I haven't seen it because I haven't seen it. No, well, I haven't even seen the scene. So.
Okay, well, the scene's all over the internet. But yeah. If you've ever, and I know you have, you used to do a Laserdisc, you do the extended scenes or deleted scenes. And what they'll do is they just don't put the resources into generating the, like, so this, in this particular scene, it was literally like a caricature of the Hulk. Instead of the full CGI
right, because
Hulk.
it wasn't completed.
Completed, yeah. Right? Well, people are like, well, this is why you see it on Twitter. This is why it didn't make it into the movie. No, people, right. They've never seen a deleted scene before like
right.
this.
If
you
they
would have
put it in the movie, it wouldn't have looked like that.
It was, I was just laughing. I'm like, oh, these poor people.
Yeah.
It was like, no, that's not what it would have looked like. Oh, right. Our B team over here on the artwork didn't do well.
we ran out of money that day.
Yeah, we're not making
it. We had to wait for the check to clear.
What I honestly was waiting for is Superman's mustache comment or something.
Yeah.
Like, no! But, yeah, so, what else do we got spoiler free?
It's hard to say anything spoiler free.
I know.
I just want to talk about it, so.
I know. All right, that's it then. Well, let's get into some comics then, and then we'll talk spoilers.
All right.
How am I spending my money this week?
All right. So a couple of big things happened this week on the speculator front.
Yes.
First and foremost, right, you guys may have heard of a little book called The Walking Dead.
I got a little story about that.
Multi-billion-dollar franchise, you know, in TV and movies and books and, you know, you name it, ended this week very abruptly. Last issue, issue number 193, hit the stands on Wednesday, and The Walking Dead is finished. This was not announced to anybody beforehand. In fact, issues 194 and 195 are solicited in previews for order.
Oh, wow.
They made an announcement a few weeks ago that the next compendium edition was going to be released, and it was going to go through issue 192. So they went to great lengths to make sure that nobody knew that issue 193 was going to be the end. News started to break late Monday, and by Tuesday it was kind of all over the place. Other than Free Comic Book Day, I have never had a line of people waiting outside my store before I open. And on Wednesday, I had people lined up outside to buy copies of this book. The problem is, we didn't have a lot of copies to sell.
Right.
I think I had 6 copies to put on the shelf.
You're making me sick.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why.
I had 6 copies to put on the shelf when I opened. I was sold out 10 after 11. I opened at 11. And that's only because it took me 10 minutes to get those people through the register. There wasn't a copy on the shelf the second my store opened. They were all in somebody's hands. And I hadn't even had a chance to ring them all up yet, so my website was clicking orders through, and I had to actually go in and take it offline so that I wouldn't get any more orders for this book. So, needless to say, this is a speculator book. I don't know how long it's going to hold, but it's selling right now for about $30.
Oh, okay.
But there will be more coming.
Right.
Like, I got reorders in on Monday afternoon before Diamond ran out. I'm kicking myself that I didn't order a larger quantity, but I do have more coming, and I think a lot of stores have more of these coming. So you will be able to maybe get your hands on them in a week or two, depending on whether, you know, people did direct ship. Again, I should have done a direct ship, which means I would have had them, you know, probably tomorrow. I didn't. I just have them coming with my regular delivery, so I was kind of stupid. But I won't have them for about 10 more days. But yeah, this was a big thing. So I know you've got more to chime in on with this.
I'm an idiot.
Why?
So I'm trying to think of ways to support the Bright Side Chat and throw some money back in, you know, and use what we do to make some money.
Right.
But that's not my frame of mind. I've never been into comics for the speculator part, right?
Right.
So I go, I'm at Friendly Neighborhood at 8:30. They open at 9 o'clock. I'm usually there at 8:30, and Slade has my stack, and he has both books this week, Walking Dead books in my stack. And I'm like, I don't read The Walking Dead. I've never read The Walking Dead. I'm not jumping in now. I have a copy of what's his name died. He gave me that, and I bought it. But my stack is so thick right now that I'm like, no, I gotta draw the line somewhere, right?
Right.
And then I'm like, I
gave that away.
I could have given it away. I could have. He had a stack this thick when I was there. I could have bought 10 of them, and then just thrown them up. And then like I'm like, I was working with Joe, and I was like my son, and I'm like, I should have bought that. So I texted him at like 1 o'clock, and he goes, no, they're all gone. I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. But I'm like, I'm so glad you're like, oh, it's going for like $30. I was like, if you said like $100, I was like, ah. But
that might be more now. I don't know.
That's
that
not
was,
my mindset, though. I've never been yesterday. In this for that reason. I like the artwork, and I've never been into selling stuff.
Well, same thing. Like, honestly, if I was a smart businessman, and apparently I'm not.
You're much smarter than I am.
I would have ordered 150 copies on Monday. And I would have direct shipped them to my store to have on Wednesday, and I would have listed 150 copies on eBay on Tuesday morning and sold them at $30-$35 a pop, and turned my $300 into $3,500. But I'm not a smart businessman, and I didn't do that. I ordered, you know, a modest amount to come back to the store. I didn't see the demand. Like I didn't click to the to the hype. I knew when I saw this, obviously I was smart enough to know I needed to go in and order some more, but I wasn't smart enough to order like I should have.
Right.
Like there are stores I know for sure that ordered 500 more copies and listed them all up for sale on eBay or something and are going to make 6 months rent out of this.
Right.
Because they were smart enough to think ahead. I wasn't smart enough to think ahead. And, you know, when's the next time something like this is going to come along that I'm going to be able to do and say, oh, I could do the Walking Dead thing and make all this money.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I've got to start listening to, like, Slade and Ernie are really good at this stuff.
Yeah.
And they, like, that's why they put it in my pile. And I've got to be like, if just don't put it next time. Don't be an
if
idiot.
They put
just
it,
put
right,
it
if
back,
they put it in your pile, just
why?
Buy it. Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing is I come in, like the week before, I'm standing there at their new release section or whatever, and he's like, all right, let me sell you some books. I'm like, oh, geez. Because he knows I buy everything he tells me to. And it's like, at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm not a bottomless pit. It's like, but and this is the one I draw the line on. Duh.
Yeah.
So.
Now, there's been a ton of backlash from retailers on this, because retailers are upset. You know, obviously, there's money that was left on the table, right? Like, if we would have known a few months ago, we could have planned ahead. It would, you know, there's definitely that money that was left on the table, and there's a certain amount of retailers that are very, very angry about the way this went down. But I, even though, again, I missed out on my own fault on an opportunity to make a ton of money, I just didn't have the foresight to do it. I give Robert Kirkman so much credit for doing what he just did, because here's a guy that could have milked The Walking Dead for the rest of his life. Like, there is money to be made from The Walking Dead until this guy turns 90 years old. Now, don't get me wrong, he's never going to be poor. The Walking Dead is going to make money forever, whether he's writing it or not. But I mean, he could have just coasted along writing shitty Walking Dead books for the next 50 years and made money.
Yeah.
But he came to the end of his story and said, I'm done. I'm going to walk away from all that future money because I told my story and I'm finished. And I mean, you have to respect that. Like, you have to respect. Because I don't know that I could do that. Like, I couldn't walk away from all that money that is now gone. Because, you know, again, quote unquote gone. Because, you know, AMC is going to pay you money forever.
Right.
But, you know, there's no future money being generated. Like, Walking Dead still sells month after month after month. And, you know, turn it over to another writer. Like, if you're done with your story, let somebody else keep going. But he's like, this is my story. I'm done. It's done. And you have to respect that.
Yeah.
You know.
He pulled a Seinfeld.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You know, you have to respect it because
just keep.
You know, imagine if Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster said, "Okay, well, we're done with our Superman story, so Superman's done." What happened? You know, what happened to the next 70 years? You know, so it was a big. It takes a lot of guts to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and to do it like he did, and just, I mean, in this world of social media and everybody finding out everything. To keep something that big under wraps for as long as it did, I mean, the fact that it didn't break until the day before release is like, amazing, you know? I mean, I really give him
props.
That's
crazy.
I wish I had extra money that I could have made out of it, but I can't fault him, you know, for doing what he did. So yeah, that obviously the biggest speculator thing that's happened in a long time. Because, again, everybody had to come out and get that. You know, I could have answered my phone all day Wednesday with Arkham Comics. No, we don't have any more Walking Deads.
Yeah.
You know, before I even said hello. Because my phone didn't ring at all unless it was somebody asking if I had Walking Dead. And then, I guess just to piggyback on it, you know, that the commemorative edition to 192 came out also, which was the second print of, you know, that. And I did order up on that. Like, I ordered a bunch of copies of that. I sold every one of those, too. And those were just... I expected those to last me for weeks, you know, because I just figured that would be a good book to have on my shelves for walk-in customers all summer long. And they were gone... They weren't gone by 10 after 11, but, I mean, they were gone by lunchtime.
Wow.
Well, my lunchtime is around 2, so by 2 o'clock, they were gone. And that was a lot. I don't remember, like, 30 copies or whatever, which is a lot for me. And I sold every one of them. So... It was like, it was really good. Good day overall. But if you can still get out there, I can't imagine a store at this point that has a bunch on the shelf. But
if
you can find one, I'd go ahead and get it. You know, like I said, the bottom may fall out of it in a few weeks when more copies hit the stands. But, you know, there's still a good opportunity, a good chance that my order doesn't get fulfilled and those books never come.
Yeah,
you know, we don't know how many copies were held back, you know, for Diamond. So, I've had confirmed orders not show up before, so it's not unheard of. All right, moving on from Walking Dead, another book by Image, Space Bandits issue number 1 came out. There's a C cover on this by Howard Chaykin that's selling for about $15. I'm not really sure why, because the other covers are just really selling for cover price. This wasn't limited in any way. It was open to order just like all the other covers. But for some reason, this one has got, you know, some heat behind it. And like I said, it's selling for about $15. So if you can find those, I'd go ahead and pick one up. And then another unannounced thing, at least to me, I don't remember seeing this, Zombie Tramp, issue number 61. There's an e-cover on this, which has Zombie Tramp provocatively laying over a gravestone, but it's Stan Lee's gravestone. So
yeah,
so it was a tribute to Stan. I don't remember seeing that art because I would have ordered several of these, and I only ordered one copy of it. It's selling for about $80 now already, and this is a low print run, and it is going to go up. So if you can find this. You know, the copy I had went into a box. I sold it for $3.99. So, but if you could find one of these, I'd definitely grab it because it's not going to go down at all. And that's it for speculator books this week.
Oh, cool. All right. So, what do we got for back issue bonus?
All right. So, back issue bonus. We talked about this last week. Marvel Comics presents issue number 6. It's barely a back issue because it's only a week old. This is the first full appearance of Wolverine's daughter. You know, like I said, we talked about it at length last week.
Last week it was in Speculator. This week,
It was in Speculator. Now it's in the back issue bonus.
Back issue bonus
because it is pushing. When I wrote this yesterday, $70. I think it's pushing almost $90 now. I saw one on Facebook for sale today for $90. It just keeps going up. Again, another book that there's just not a lot of copies out there. Estimates put it at about 12,000 copies circulation, which really is not that much at all. And now issue number 5 has also started to pick up, because that's actually her cameo appearance at the on the last page, and that's starting to push $20. So if you can find either one of these out there, again, I would be very, very surprised if you could find a number 6 for cover price, but you might be able to find some number 5s. I did have 2 on the rack Wednesday for cover price. You know, I have since shamelessly pulled them and marked them up, but smart readers could have bought them, you know, all the way up until yesterday for $3.99. So you may still find them out there on the shelves. But like I said, both very, very hot books. Moving down to another book we talked about last week is a speculator book, is Canto issue number 1. So again, this is now selling for about $25 for the main cover, and the 1 in 10 variant cover is hitting $50 to $70. So, you know, again, if you listen to last week's show, we talked a lot about this book. I really liked it a lot. I had people looking for it this week. So there are second prints coming. Now, they're not going to hit the speculator levels, but it's a great read. So I'd definitely look for that if you can to pick it up and get in on the series, because it's pretty good. Next is Batman Damned issue number 1. Seems to be on the rise again. I would have to imagine that's spurred on by the fact that issue number 3 came out, you know, and now the whole thing is completed.
And everybody went, oh yeah, that exists.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it had a 1 and a 2 that came. Number 1 came out a year ago.
Yeah, almost, but, yeah.
But yeah, you know, $70 to $100 for this book.
Really?
Yeah, it's super hot still. And, you know, like I said, now that all 3 issues are out, you'll probably start seeing, you know, sets of them, you know, sets of 3 on eBay, I would expect. You know, the other 2 aren't that expensive. So, I mean, if you're paying, say, $100 for number 1, you're probably getting all 3 of them for $100, because 2 and 3 aren't really worth a whole lot. But I would expect to pay that to get all 3 copies. From Marvel, we have Dark Avengers issue number 1. This is from 2009. This is completely speculator-driven, but, you know, everybody's wondering what the next phase of the Marvel movie universe is going to look like. But there's been a lot of speculation that the Thunderbolts are going to be a part of it, especially with the Disney Plus show of, you know, Winter Soldier and Falcon. So, again, this is a book that there are a lot of copies out there, but it is selling for $15 to $30. Expect this to go higher if any of this news turns out to be, you know, really turns out to be accurate. This book could go up quite a bit. And last but not least, another relatively new book. This is Daredevil issue number 2, but this is the second print. And the reason why is the cover features Cold North, who's the new character that's been in this series. He is on the cover of the second printing. Which I guess is why people are interested, because, you know, his first appearance is still number 2, whether it's the first printing or the second printing. Yeah. But you can still get copies of number 2 first printing for cover price. So I don't quite know why.
Yeah, that
this one's going so high. Now again, lower print run, because there's not as many second prints as there are first prints, and I guess the fact that he's on the cover. But this book's hitting $40 right now. Again, one that I really don't quite understand, because I don't know why Cole North is such a popular character, and what they think is going to happen with him going forward that makes it so popular now. Yeah. I mean, you're reading Daredevil, so
yeah.
I mean, you know who he is.
I don't understand.
Nothing to really write home about. Just another cop on the beat, really. So I don't know. We'll see. But
yeah.
We don't write the news.
As you're talking, I'm racking my brain for something, and I'm like, yeah, trying to give you a nugget. I'm like, maybe it's a, and I'm like, no, yeah, he's that kind of a character. It's like, yeah, nope. It's like
just your standard cop character that's after the, you know, after the vigilante superhero. So we'll see.
Well, yeah, but is he kind of enhanced?
I don't think so. I think he just had good fighting abilities.
But that's the thing. I don't know. It's maybe, yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe we'll find out something more later. Know. But in any case, second print, Daredevil number 2, $40. And that's it for back issue bonus.
All right. And for final order cutoff for Monday.
Yeah, for Monday. So a little bit less of a time frame this week because we're not coming to you till Friday. But we have from Dark Horse a new series called Manor Black. This is issue number 1 of 4. This is another horror series. It's written by Cullen Bunn. He does a lot of horror properties for Dark Horse. I've been a fan of a lot of them. I've read several of the things he's done, and I've really liked them. So, you know, I think this might be a book to check out. I think this, you know, a couple of incentive covers for it, but really it's just the main cover that you're going to look for. But this might be a low order for certain stores, so if you're interested in it, you may want to go in and get an order placed for it beforehand. Moving on to DC. DC was very thin on FOC this week. There wasn't a lot of DC, but there is a great variant cover for Batman Who Laughs, issue number 7. It's done by David Finch. Really, like I said, really, really good looking cover. So I take a look at that. I don't have any other variants or new series from DC. from Image, we have Spawn number 299. It's not a new series, and nothing really stands out specifically about any of the three covers. It's just that Spawn is super hot right now. You know, we've been talking about it the last couple of issues as we ramp up to issue 300. Shelf copies could be scarce, so if you're interested in especially the B or C covers, definitely go in and get an order placed for those. Marvel, we have a whole series of Carnageized covers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so we have Avengers
blast through those.
Yeah, Avengers 22, Black Panther 14, Captain America 12, which there's some confusion about this because we talked about this last week as that issue 12.
And it but said then 13.
The images out there showed issue 13, but right. Now the images are showing issue 12 again. So I think it's resolicited because the art was incorrect.
Oh.
But it is definitely issue 12.
Remember, yeah.
We talked about it.
I texted you. I was like, we said 12, but the, and yeah. Then I changed it on the. So now it's back to 12 again?
So it is definitely issue 12.
Okay.
And then there's Fantastic Four issue 12 and Thanos issue number 4. I still really like that Captain America cover as far as my pick, but yeah, the Black Panther cover is also pretty solid. So,
and that's once definitely again, 14, of, not 13
it is definitely,
or 15.
Well, as far as I know, I read it right off of Diamonds. I read it right off my order page. So,
yeah, that Captain America was really cool.
They're pretty
Captain
solid.
Marvel one from the week before was really cool too.
Still, I think my favorite overall is that Captain Marvel one.
Yeah,
but, the Captain America looks to be pretty solid too. Couple new series from Marvel. We have Death's Head issue number 1. That's going to be a 4-issue miniseries. There's multiple covers for this. And then last week we talked a lot about House of X. Well, now we have Powers of X. This is issue number 1 of 6. Also, multiple covers available for that. It's not going to be supported by a launch party like House of X is, but you know, like we said, we talked about last week, these are going to alternate weeks. You know, every other week for the 6 or 7 weeks. So.
I'm surprised they didn't launch those together and then just give you a week off and then you get the next. You know what I mean?
Probably would have made sense to do that. I'm glad they didn't from a retailer perspective because having to pay for all those books at once
that's true
is a big thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, you know, can't emphasize how big I think these series are going to be. So Powers of X is definitely out there. And like I said, there's a million covers for it. That's it for Marvel. Two more real quick from Aftershock Comics. We have Knights Temporal, issue number 1. Didn't have a number of issues attached, so I think this may be an ongoing series. There's 2 covers available for issue number 1. And then from Valiant, we have Killers, issue number 1. This is going to be a 5-issue miniseries, and there's multiple covers for that. And that is it for Final Order Cutoff.
All right. And to get into recommended reading, I actually want to start.
Okay.
Because I wanted to talk about Lois Lane, number 1.
Okay.
Did you read it?
Not yet.
It's really good. It's for a DC book with Lois Lane, Clark Kent, it's so much different than what you would... I think just by the title, you're going to expect it to be a little different.
Right.
But it's almost like a normal story. It's set into that in that universe of superheroes and stuff where There's a love story part of it. There's an investigation part of it. There's just life part of it. It's just a really well told story that I don't want to get into the whole thing. The artwork is really good. I was really excited about the artwork. Very comic booky. It gave me that feel of I don't know if it's hard to explain, but the artwork felt like when I was a kid. It was on better stock, but it was felt like when I was a kid, but I was reading almost like an adult story.
Okay.
And I just think if, like, especially if you like DC, you like Superman, you like that universe, this is a great break, a great read from that in a different perspective that I really don't, that I haven't seen before. Okay. And I can't recommend it enough. I thought it was really, really good. Really well done. Cool. That's why I was excited to talk about it. I just wanted to see what they, when I saw it on the shelf, I knew it was coming. And when I saw it, I was like, I was just intrigued. Like, what are they going to do with this? And I mean, Lois Lane's always been a strong character.
Right.
But I didn't know what they were going to do with it. And it's pretty good. It's really good.
Cool. Yeah. It's definitely in my read pile. So, definitely one I'm looking forward to.
All right. And what else? What do you got?
All right. So first one is from Image Comics. It's Sea of Stars, issue number one. This was written by Jason Aaron, who we're all very, very familiar with because we just read War of the Realms and a whole bunch of Thor. So this is, I guess, his creator-owned project that he's doing for Image. And the art is done by Stephen Green. So this one was a little weird and took a little bit to get going, I think. There's a guy, it's basically a father and son story, but the father is he's obviously a Sea of Stars. It takes place in space, so it's sometime in the future. He's basically a trucker, but he's a space trucker, right? So instead of going across country with a load, he's going from planet to planet with loads. So, you know, he's got this job that he needs to do, and he takes his son with him because he doesn't have anybody to watch the kid, basically, you know, for a week while he's gone. So the kid's typical kid, you know, he's complaining because he's bored, there's nothing to do, his video game isn't charged, or, you know, there's no Wi-Fi or whatever they need to play the video games out there. So he's just griping and you know, not happy about being there. And, you know, that takes place for a couple of pages. But, you know, the kid gets up and he starts wandering around the ship. And he goes down into the cargo hold where the load they're transporting is from, like, a museum. So there's all kinds of, you know, valuable and old things down there. While the kid's down there, the ship gets attacked. And, you know, the father is trying to get down to his son because the ship has come under attack. It's being rocked all over the place. And he doesn't really know what's attacking him, but obviously he's afraid for his kid, so he's trying to get to the kid. And the ship kind of blows apart. They're being attacked by not another ship, but by some big space creature. So looks like the creature kills the dad. The kid sees looks like the creature ate his dad. And then he just starts flying around and floating around in space. But all of a sudden he can breathe, and like, he's not having any trouble out there. Like he can breathe, you know, nothing's bothering him. And you don't really know why. And you think it might have something to do with something he picked up or something he was messing with down in the cargo hold. But he kind of crashes on his planet and, you know, there's indigenous life forms that come across him and they're surprised because, you know, he's able to breathe without his metal suit and he's able to communicate with them, you know, in their language. And you don't really know what's going on, but, you know, like I said, it seems like it took a little while to get going, and I'm really not sure where it's going, because that's kind of where it ended, was with him on the planet, you know, interacting with these two characters that really were looking to eat him because they were looking for food. But since he could talk and could communicate with them, they decided not to eat him. And that's really it. So, I don't know if this is a recommendation or not, because I really have no idea what this story is going to be about. Yeah. And where it's going to go. But the art was really solid. and the writing was good. It's interesting. So, you know, and I like Jason Aaron, so I'm going to give it, you know, I'm going to give it another issue or two to see where it goes. But, you know, like I said, I don't necessarily give it a huge thumbs up. Like, you got to run out and buy it necessarily, right. But it was good. Like, you know, I kind of enjoyed it. So, I guess, you know, if you like Jason Aaron, this might be up your alley, and I'd say it's worth picking up.
Cool. All right. My second one is Midnight Mystery, City of Ghosts from Alterna Comics, and Bernie Gonzalez, and I think writer, and Wes Locker, I guess, was artwork. So this one, I'm kind of on the same as you and that one. I grabbed it because it looked simple, looked like fun. I like mystery, so I was like, right. Oh, I'll try this out. And it was $1.50. Well, you kind of get your money's worth. It wasn't a bad story for $1.50. The artwork is very simplistic. Reminded me, even in the store, I looked at it, I showed it to Joe, and I was like, it looks like Archer.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of like from the cartoon Archer.
Right.
It's that type of, like, the faces kind of look like that. Very, you know, for $1.50, it's got that old school feel stock. Right. But the story is like, it's big writing, big font. Yeah. It's larger font, but it was, you know, I literally read it by the pool, and I was like, that was kind of a fun summer read, you know, kind of. And I am intrigued on, you know, what's going to happen next. And for $1.50, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I can't say it's like, you're not going to open this up and be like blown away, and the artwork's not going to blow you away. But it was just like, if you like mysteries and you know, for $1.50, it's not too bad.
I like Alterna Comics, and I like to support them as a company because I like what they do. I really appreciate the fact that they're, you know, they put out $1.50 comic books. You know, they're all on newsprint.
Yep.
You know, like old, you know, like the old style comics. But, you know, like you said, you know, you do kind of get what you pay for. Like, it's not going to be the highest level of art and writing.
Right.
But, you know, the stories are entertaining. And like I said, as a company, I like that. I like the direction that they're trying to go to keep things kind of old school and keep the, you know, like I said, keep the cost down. Because, yeah. You know, again, let's face it, comics at $4 and $5 a pop, it starts to add up. So anything you can buy for $1.50, you know, is worth taking a look at. So
yeah, there were a couple of page turning moments where you're like, whoa, this is going to get cool. And it because it's, you know, he's doing, and you don't know why he's doing this investigation. You don't know. Right. There's a lot of, you know, even by the end, you're still, it's a mystery.
Right.
And those are fun by nature for me anyways. So yeah, it's like I said, it's $1.50. I mean, if it would have been $4, I probably wouldn't be talking about it right now.
Right.
So, all right, what else you got?
All right, and then second, I have from Image Comics also Space Bandits issue number one. So we talked about briefly in the Speculator books with the C cover, but this is the next Mark Millar project that he's working on with Netflix. So this has already been confirmed to be a series that's in development for Netflix before this book even. I mean, really, the book is written to be a series on Netflix. So this has art by Matteo Scalera. This was actually a pretty good book. It was a lot of fun. This is, you know, as the title would imply, Space Bandit. So, you know, this is a cast of characters that are out there, you know, breaking the law. You know, they're up to no good. And as one would expect, you know, there's no loyalty among thieves, you know, so they're not even really true to each other. So you kind of throughout the book, you meet who you figure out are going to be the two main characters going forward. Each one of them, you know, ends their story in this book kind of getting screwed over by the people that they're working with, and kind of end up finding themselves together at the end in the same place. And you know, you kind of get the feeling that going forward, they're going to get together and team up and try to get, maybe try to get a little revenge on the people that did them wrong and, you know, are you know, going to try to go into business for themselves. So this, like I said, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I am looking forward to seeing this as a show on Netflix as well, because I think it looks really good. What I really liked about it is, you know, this obviously takes place way in the future, and not necessarily on Earth, but there's so many, like, 80s Earth references that happen in this book. Like, you know, they're on a spaceship that, you know, they open traveling on a spaceship called the Lionel Richie. And then, you know, you fast forward to some planet that they're on, and they're in the Molly Ringwald district. So, you know, yeah, so it was a lot of fun. Like I said, there was a lot of 80s stuff mixed in. But this really kind of had a Thelma and Louise kind of feel to me. Like I said, it was a lot of fun. I really liked it a lot, and I think it's going to be a good series. It's a 5-issue mini, so I think it's definitely worth picking up. And, you know, like I said, I think it's going to be a fun TV show as well. So,
cool. All right, I'm excited. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. All right, so, John.
DJ.
I will always love you.
Will you always, are you going to always love me?
Yes. Yeah. What'd you think of that opening?
I mean, I thought it was great. I guess, you know, having not seen the end game, I guess that's what you were talking about. Is that the end of?
No. Oh, that's, okay. No. Okay. Actually, now that we're in spoilers, the end of, the end game was Mexico.
Oh, okay.
The opening scene in Mexico.
Opening scene in Mexico. Okay.
Yeah. Not that whole, the whole opening with the music and
right,
then rolling into
Whitney Houston and Tony Stark, you know, all the Avengers in memoriam. Yeah. I just really liked that, you know, we kind of knew once we saw the second, you know, I guess to back up in time, I guess, you know, when we first heard this movie was coming out, after we saw Endgame, you know, the big question was, where was this movie going to fit in to the timeline with Endgame? And then we got trailer number 2, and we realized that, you know, this movie was going to take place in the post-snap, you know, world. And I just liked that they just went right into it. Like, they didn't, you know, waste any time kind of going right into the ramifications of what happened in Endgame. You know, we open the movie with them, you know, the whole world's in mourning for, you know, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers and Natasha and
Vision.
You know, Vision, right. I was like, somebody else popped Vision, up too. Vision,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, Steve Rogers. Did you say that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's where he actually didn't die.
Well, but they don't know
but
that.
They
like,
don't
I
know.
I guess the
right.
world
he
at
disappeared,
large thinks,
right.
Right. I Which guess the world cool. thinks he's dead.
Right.
He's like Bruce Banner from the old Hulk TV show. You know, the world must think that he is dead.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, like I said, I kind of like that they just didn't waste it. Like, they just went right into it. They did this little kind of quick 5-minute synopsis of, like, kind of, it was almost like watching a TV show where they said, this is what happened last week. And,
right.
you know, well, you get this little.
I thought, yeah, they did a great job using the kids
right.
as that. And they had all the right, like, verbiage in there.
Right.
Like, we're moving on to the next phase of right. your life. You know what right. I mean? So it's like, you know, you're going into phase 4.
Right.
We're coming out of, and.
Now, I don't know why it changed from the snap to the blip, you know,
well,
because
the
I think
snap
the snap was
what,
fine. Well,
right,
I guess the snap
calling,
was when they disappeared, right?
The blip was when they came
when they,
back.
When they came back.
And that was really cool. When they showed that, like, the gym.
Yeah,
like,
that was awesome.
They show like every that was it was really kind of sad. They showed you that scene of like all the kids disappearing, but right. then it was really cool. Like I guess And now that we're in spoiler, we could talk about this. I've been excited to talk about this. So did all of these people come back exactly where they were?
It seemed to be because
that's a fun discussion, right?
Because they flash forward to that scene with May where she's talking.
She was
at
in
the
an
benefit,
apartment,
right? Yeah. And she pops back into her apartment where she was living. But 5 years later, there's new people living there.
And they like the one person thought she was a ghost. The other person thought
the wife thought it was like the mistress, you know, the husband. Yeah. So yeah, so I'm guessing everybody just popped back in where they were. So what if you were on a plane? Or on a boat when you were blipped, or when you snapped. Like, so when you come back, are you free falling from the sky or, you know, I don't know how that works.
I didn't go that far, but that means like Peter and Doctor Strange and they were all on, the planet.
Right.
You know, and yeah, so it's like all of those people had to come back and let's be honest, they got back pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, they just hopped through the portal. You know, Doctor Strange
did that. Just gets you home. Right.
Yeah. But again, I was more thinking about, again, the people that were traveling somehow. Like, the boat didn't reappear. Just the people did. So, like, I imagine they're, like, drowning in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, right? So,
well, no, because go to the end credit scene of Infinity War when they had Maria Hill and Fury, and you saw that helicopter crash because the pilot disappeared. Right. Well, now, 5 years later, that a pilot's just appearing in the middle of the sky.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, just free-falling.
I know. That's,
yeah, he's just free-falling into the buildings.
I didn't even think of that.
So, I mean, I don't know. That wasn't really, really well thought out, I don't think, because
some people
weren't happy to come back because they're dying again, you know? Right. It's like, damn it, I just died, and now I'm dying again.
One of the lines, and this is jumping ahead, but when they're on the plane flying over, and Peter's sitting next to, I think, the teacher or whatever, and the teacher's like, yeah, my wife pretended like she
got that was awesome. But she was just down the street with my brother-in-law or whatever she said.
No, she left. She took off. And he goes, we had a fake funeral. He goes, actually, the funeral was real.
Right.
We didn't know she was still alive.
Yeah.
But that brings up a whole other topic of how many people did that?
Right.
Like, how many people were like, wait a minute, everybody, I disappeared. Yeah. Bye-bye. It's like
I'm on the FBI's top 10 wanted list, so I'm just going to pretend like I'm gone.
Now, what do you do 5 years later?
Right.
Well, now everybody comes back, and you're like, hi, I was just kidding. Or you just come back? I don't know.
I guess you just come back.
Now you have to come back.
It's
some funny like tangents there.
Yeah. So that brings me to the first note. I took a couple of notes that I wrote down because I didn't want to forget
to ask. You took notes? Look at us.
So, Betty Brant, you know, Ned's girlfriend. Am I stupid, or did we always know that that was Betty Brant? Like, did they tell us her name
in
Homecoming?
I don't know. We'd have to see it.
Because Betty Brant works at the Daily Bugle, you know? Like, that's a character that we know from the Daily Bugle. And I never, maybe I'm just dumb, and I didn't get a chance to rewatch. I was going to rewatch the beginning of Far From Home, or Homecoming, to see. But I don't think they told us her name before, so.
Well, they may have just called her Betty.
Yeah, so I don't know. But for some reason, when it popped up on the screen this time, you know, where she was doing the news report and they said Betty Brant, I was
She clearly wants to be in media because she's the one doing the video.
Right.
At the beginning.
But she's just the secretary at the Daily Bugle, at least, you know, in the comics. She's basically the one that gives Peter his money when he gets paid from his photos.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I maybe we knew that all along, but when I saw it, I was like, oh, crap, that's Betty Brant. And then I was thinking about, I know her. She's such and such. So I was just wondering if we should have already known that. And I don't remember if we did.
Yeah, no, I don't remember from that. And I just watched the movie. I don't think they did.
I don't think they showed their names. Homecoming. Because they did the same type of scene where they were, you know, first day of school, they were doing their little video broadcast, but I don't think they had their names listed. So.
Yeah. What did you think of Spider-Man at the benefit?
I thought he was terrible.
So did
Like, first of all, I don't like that suit. Like, I know it's the Iron Spider suit, and I get it, but I don't like that. I was really glad that he wasn't in that costume for the whole movie. Because I was like, I don't like this suit. But yeah, he, well, but May even made fun of that, right? Like, he was very stiff and very wooden. Like, it was just awkward. So, like, I think he was very awkward there.
So I think, I'm wondering if that was the first opportunity for us to be like, things aren't what they seem. Because when he was in the suit and he was talking to the crowd and he's like, hi, thank you for coming out. And he was very stiff.
Right.
And it's like, he, it was very, like, I didn't even, I thought that was going to be an impersonator.
Yeah.
When they went, and when they went backstage and it was actually him, I'm like, why is he acting that way? And then, you know.
Nervous, I guess.
I guess, but what is he nervous about? You know, it's just, I mean, clearly that's what they were going
for. Public speaking. You know, he's 16 years old, so.
No, oh, I know, but he's, it just, like, when he was talking, I was like, wow, I'm feeling uncomfortable here.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what I mean? And I didn't even like the way the suit looked.
No,
it looked like a
terrible
fake suit.
Yeah.
It's like, cause when he's off on another world fighting and the suit looks great, but when he's standing on stage, it just didn't look as good.
Well, and again, if you're the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man and you're going to talk to a bunch of these neighborhood people that were basically all displaced from the blip, cause that's kind of what the fundraiser was for, right? All these people that were homeless. Why aren't you just wearing your regular Spidey suit? Like,
right.
These guys all are, like, this is the benefit for people that need money, and you're wearing, like, a $3 billion Spider-Man suit. It's like, why don't you hack off a finger from the suit, and I can buy a house? You know, I don't need, you know, I don't need a
fundraiser. Yeah, but I think that, and now here's what I'll say, watching that on the screen, even, Imagine that's real and it's real life and you're in that audience. That's the suit that was there. And I even got in awe and this is fake. And I'm sitting in a theater and I'm watching it and I'm thinking, that's the suit that battled Thanos. That's the suit that that was there when Tony died. That's the suit that, you know what I mean? And it's almost like, you're like, it's like, if he wore his friendly neighborhood suit, that's not the same suit. So when you're having that benefit and you bring out that suit, that to me is like, that's the suit. That suit's been to space. That suit did and now he's in it. And it's, even just being in the theater and like being a big geek, I'm geeking out looking, I'm like, that's the suit, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's how I would play it. That's how I would say, like, that's why he's wearing that suit. But yeah, I am glad he didn't wear the suit the entire movie. I'm glad he put that away. It was cool, that little machine or whatever for the
like the I guess the charging machine, the charging station or whatever it was. It was pretty cool.
Apparently, he doesn't have wireless charging yet.
Right,
but
$3 billion suit. But actually, who knows if the glasses were like multi-billion-dollar glasses? Who knows what the suit cost?
It's the glasses weren't multi-billion. It was the technology that was attached to them.
I guess
meaning like, you know, your satellite in space and all of the
Edith. You know, all, can we talk about Edith for a second?
That was awesome. Edith.
Even dead, I'm the hero. That is awesome.
Even dead, I'm the hero. Yeah. And it's like. And what cracks me up is, like, I've heard people like, what was the name? I'm like, come on. How do you not remember
that? How do you not remember? Because at first I'm thinking, why Edith? Like, why isn't it, you know, Pepper or Friday or whatever, you know, it's normally. And then I'm like, oh, Edith. You know, because then he says it. And it's like, well, that's funny.
Well, did you see my tweet to Dr. Joe when he said that he was sitting in the theater by himself and he was in the big, huge chairs? So I sent him the pic. I sent him the either it was a picture or a gif of Edith Ann in the big rocking chair, but it doesn't say her name. But he's going to see Far From Home, so I go, by the end of this movie, this gif will mean more to you because that's Edith, you know, which I thought was pretty funny. I'm like, oh, what are the odds? He says this on his way in, but that name was a riot. That I still think he's alive.
Oh, I don't know. So, not necessarily a part of the movie specifically, but this is our first movie in a post-Stan Lee cameo world, because there was no cameo in this movie of Stan. So, I guess now we've moved on to our post-Stan Lee cameos. I thought that I had read somewhere that they were going to incorporate him even in other movies some way in the future. But and I looked really hard, and I didn't see anything. So
no. I saw a guy in the background that looked similar to him.
Yeah.
And I was like, is there any way they put that guy in for that? He kind of had the same kind of hairstyle, color. Yeah. Coloring,
I was just looking again for like glasses. A photo on a table somewhere. Like I was looking for some. Now, obviously, it said at the end, you know,
yeah,
thanks to Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. You know, I mean, there was
right.
mention, of course, but you know, no cameo and no picture. Like there was really no,
yeah,
no reference there. So I thought that was kind of a bummer.
I think, yeah. It's like I thought for sure that they would keep it going. Similar to how they did in the Netflix series where he was just like, he'd go by on a bus or something.
Right, that's what like I thought. Like, there'd just be, a photo on a table or a newspaper clipping or something. But unless I missed it, but I looked pretty hard trying to find one and I didn't see it. So
yeah. But so we've talked about the glasses. Are we going to talk about the elephant in the room?
What's
Peter Peter Tingle?
Oh, the Peter Tingle? Yeah. I thought that was awesome,
name
man.
For spider sense?
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was great. Especially when Happy starts talking to him about his Peter Tingle.
Oh, yeah. Like how it makes the rounds in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's, but he, I think it's also like Aunt May saying that it's not working.
Right.
Like, you know, like, oh, like she throws a banana at him and
right.
that's. And not that your spider sense would go off because of a banana being thrown at you, but I think they're bringing it up because the whole idea, like, I think they're mentioning that his spider sense isn't working.
Well, right, and that's a new twist because it's never been something he had to learn or control or turn on and off.
Well,
it was always reflexively there all the time, so I don't know where they're going with that.
I'm wondering if it's something similar to how Hulk didn't work. He didn't work for a while, and are they incorporating kind of the same idea on the last time Peter's spider sense, I almost said Peter Tingle, but the last time the spider sense worked was when he got dusted.
Right.
And like he sensed that that was coming, and it's like, and like somebody said online, they're like, yeah, that's why his, what you call it, that's why his was more drawn out. Other people got dusted and they were like, oh, what's happening? And then they just got dusted.
Right.
Whereas he's like, I don't feel right. This isn't right. Like he sensed it and then got dusted. So it was more drawn out with Tony Stark. And he doesn't want that. Is he maybe suppressing it or, and it, you know, by the end of the movie, he has it back clearly.
Right. Right.
But is that a possibility that something that they were exploring.
Could be. Like, they don't explain, so we don't really know
right.
why it wasn't working. You know, because really, you don't even hear anything about it until, like, the Avengers movie. Because even in Homecoming, there's really no mention or no application of his spider sense.
Right.
There's no indication that he even has it, because it was all AI suit-driven. You know, everything was being told to him by the suit. You know, so you didn't even know he had spider sense until kind of Endgame when they, or not Endgame, but Infinity War.
Infinity War and his, yeah. the hair stood up on
right.
his arm. You know,
so it's like something they've kind of been phasing in
right.
as almost like a new power, but I don't know. Again, it's always been something that he inherently had, you know,
right
from
but
the
they,
beginning. So I don't know.
They haven't done a lot of his backstory. They,
right.
You know,
we just don't know
just
what they're, where
right
they're going
in Homecoming.
With. Yeah, where they're going with that. You know, again, like you said, clearly it looks like it's working now and everything is, you know,
right.
kind of the way it should be because he has it at the end of the movie. So, yeah, again, now to kind of go back to what you chastised me a little bit about earlier, it's like anybody that knows these comics was kind of completely...
Yeah, okay, let's have
like
this
the whole
discussion.
First half of the movie, right? You're like... He's the bad guy. Everybody knows he's the bad guy. We all know these things are all illusions. Like, it was just predictable. Like, you knew all along that he was suckering Pete into giving him the technology of the glasses.
I didn't.
Like, oh, see, I saw that coming from a mile away.
Now, when I say I didn't, here's why I didn't. I thought they were doing a really good job, and I think they did a really good job, because go back to the Kree and the Skrulls.
Right. Okay,
the Skrulls ended up being good guys, right? So what ends up happening in this movie, I'm sitting here right up until that bar scene, even in that bar scene, I was like, I was sitting there the first time I saw it, I'm thinking, are they going to pull this off? Are they going to try to make him a good guy, at least for this movie? Because he is from a different Earth. Now they've are they introducing the multiverse? Are they making him a good guy, at least for this movie? Is Marvel going to be that ballsy to pull this off? Because right. Mysterio has never been a good guy.
Right.
And I'm like, and I remember sitting there thinking, like, wow, if they pull this off, how are people going to react to this? Right. This is, and do they, like we said, all of these movies, this entire incarnation of Spider-Man, we have different versions of most of these characters.
Right.
Right? So it wouldn't, and that's why I think it is a spoiler to tell people that Mysterio, you know, he's the bad guy. Well, no, you don't, because, and the other thing is, there's a lot of people that don't know the background. Now, granted, most of the people that don't know the background, they're not comic book readers. They're probably not listening to us. So not, no harm, no foul. But I know.
Well, but
both
my
daughter and
my wife leaned over to me and said, is he a bad guy? Right before Peter was getting ready to give him the glasses. And, you know, I have to shrug my shoulders to say, well, I don't know, because I don't want to tell her what's going to happen.
Right.
But
I know the illusion. I knew the whole story, but they could have written it to keep going in that direction.
They could have, but
you know what I mean?
I don't know. It's like I said,
and there are people that don't have as much knowledge that I know my wife and my daughter, they didn't say anything to me in the theater. So right. they were all the way in.
Right.
My wife's like, I really liked Jake Gyllenhaal. He was awesome. And then you find out, I was like, yeah. Huh? So I thought they did a really good job. And especially for even people like us, I was buying into it. I understand. I know he's a bad guy. I know it's all illusions.
Right.
But you can't. There's evidence of them pulling this off in the past.
I'm going to say, it didn't take anything away from me. Like, I'm not saying it was badly written or poorly done. I'm just saying it was very, like, I saw that coming from a mile away. Like,
right.
It didn't surprise me at all. Like, that part of it, like I said, I completely knew it was coming.
I did too.
Now, there's other parts that we'll talk about in a few minutes that I didn't see coming at all that really took me by surprise. But that part of it, like I said, I pegged that right from basically 5 minutes into, once he got the glasses, I kind of had all that figured out. Like,
well, he didn't get it. Well, of course you had it all figured
out.
No, once
he got
the glasses, he turned.
No, once Peter had the glasses, I got it all kind of, like, in my head.
Really?
I was like, all right, I know that this is what's happening. Now, I guess what's funny is they introduced the multiverse and then took it right back out again, because now there's no such thing as, well, at least
he was lying.
It was lying. He was making the whole thing up. But we were using the multiverse theory to explain all the shit that happened. All the stuff that happened in Endgame. We were like, oh, well, because this is a multiverse. And now we get to Spider-Man and they take it all away. Like, we don't know if there's a multiverse or not, because he was making it up. So I thought that was awesome. I was like, oh, well. Because at first I thought he did come from the multiverse, he was just the bad guy. But then we come to find out, well, that was all made up too, like, you know?
Right.
So that did take me by surprise. I thought that was cool. And, you know, that scene in the bar. Now, let me ask you this, because I don't remember. Again, I haven't gone back and watched Iron Man in a long time. Was that really a scene from Iron Man?
Yes.
Okay, so it was.
Oh,
so that is the actor from Iron Man. Okay,
see,
I wasn't sure. I figured it was, but so that was cool that they brought this guy back out of obscurity, just to bring him into this movie, which I thought was really cool. So yeah, I thought the whole motivation, like, I liked the idea that these were all disgruntled Stark,
workers.
You know, former Stark employees that were all working together. So I like that part of it. I didn't see coming. Like, I just figured Mysterio was the bad guy. You know,
exactly.
I didn't see any of that coming.
But this is the second Spider-Man movie, and both Spider-Man movies are villains created by Tony Stark's legacy.
Right.
Because Vulture was created because Stark decided that they're going to start collecting.
Right.
Pick up the mess. So it puts him out of work.
Right.
And but that now it's like so this entire thing, it's like, which is, we're still in Tony Stark's legacy.
Well, almost every villain that's happened in the entire MCU, you could trace back to Tony. Well, at least the Avengers.
Well, not Thanos.
Well, the Avengers, yeah, the Avengers stuff, though. You can trace it back to Tony. The Chitauri, the Ultron, like, all that stuff goes back to Tony, so...
Well, how does that go back to Tony? I think that's more of people just... I mean, because the Tesseract, they're after the Tesseract, which was long before Tony.
Well...
I think the whole, the Thanos storyline goes way back to, and we don't even know,
I guess,
but
we found that out later, but back when those movies were coming out, you know... I mean, it was all blamed on Tony. Everything was. He even blames himself for all of that stuff.
But he wasn't the cause of Loki coming to Earth. That would be more Thor. That would be more Thor. At first, they thought it was Thor. Like, remember in Avengers, he turns to Nick Fury turns to Thor and goes, "'Cause of you," and he says, "You know, you showed up on our planet a few years ago and showed us we're not alone." Now, obviously, we know now Fury's lying because he knows Captain Marvel,
right?
At that time, but still, Thanos had nothing. The first Avengers movie, Tony was called in. He was building power in his building. He had nothing.
I don't know.
I have to go back.
I haven't watched these in a long time, but
oh, I watch that one all the time.
Yeah, something in my mind attributes it to Tony. But like I said, I haven't watched even the Avengers movie in 10 years. Yeah. I don't know. So
he had nothing. He was called in to help with that. He wasn't the cause of it.
I'll have to go back and watch it, and I can defend my position better.
where he came in and he created Ultron.
Well,
that was the first one where he was at. I think he's the first, you know, version. And even in the first Iron Man, that's not his fault. He got kidnapped, and he was you know, doing his thing to survive a bad guy doing something to him. But in the Spider-Man, it's like these people are Tony's action. They're repercussions of Tony's actions. And again, Tony was all about his legacy. And from the first time in the cave, do something with your life. You don't want your legacy to be blah, blah, blah. And whatever. So he spent his life trying to create a better legacy. But here he is, even after death, he has created bad guys that are still living on that we have to deal with. Spider-Man had to deal with. That's what I got out of. That bar scene where all those people came from,
right?
You know, let's see. Anything else on that?
Well, no, I lost track of it because now I'm looking. I'm trying to Google freaking Avengers movie. I'm not really paying attention.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
I'll get back to it later.
Mysterio got his name.
Yeah.
And
yes.
The kids sitting around and they're translating the Italian.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's Italian Man of Mystery.
Man of Mystery.
It's like, yeah. It's like, oh, that's how it is. So before we go any further, how about we jump ahead?
Okay.
All the way, because I think most of everything we're going to be talking about is going to pertain to the final end credit scene when Fury, the whole time in this movie was Talos.
Talos, yeah. Well, it...
So...
Yeah, well, it just made me kind of wonder what's... I don't know what's going on there, really. Like, I don't know what Fury's doing, and we don't know how long he's been there. Like, made me wonder, has he been there ever since Captain Marvel? Like, has it always been the Skrulls
no.
on Earth? You know,
so I thought the same thing. So I saw it on, like I said, I saw it Tuesday night. I came home and I started like looking stuff up and looking into it, and there's a bunch of fan theories going on, and the strongest one that I found is that and it can be backed by a whole bunch of stuff. So obviously we know he was Fury in Captain Marvel.
Right.
But then in Iron Man, we're assuming he's still Iron Man. He's acting the way, Fury would act.
Right.
But where he starts to where he starts to be different is in Winter Soldier. So the not in Winter Soldier, but in Winter Soldier, that's when everything Shield goes bad, everything goes bad, and he burns all his stuff, right? And he says, I'm going to take off. But also in Agents of Shield, and this is one of the reasons I started watching it again, because I was watching it at the time, and I remember when he shook Coulson's hand,
right,
and he said, I'm out of here, you know, I'm done, you're the new head of Shield. So a lot of people are speculating right now that that is when he took off. Because from that moment on, he hasn't been the same character. Okay? And that includes, like, so in Age of Ultron, and somebody had this, I think it was, oh man, somebody pointed it out, but they got it from BuzzFeed, and it was earlier this year. So BuzzFeed had already mentioned this, what I'm about to tell you right now, earlier this year, before this scene, before knowing this, what's in this movie, right? Well, in Age of Ultron, let's back up to Captain Marvel. In Captain Marvel, one of the things he says to Carol Danvers is, as a defining thing of his personality, he says, if my toast is cut diagonally, I can't eat it.
Right.
Okay. So that, and that's
this.
I've seen this. Okay. Well, in Age of Ultron, he cuts his toast diagonally.
Right.
He cut, it was a grilled cheese sandwich or something, but he cut it diagonally. So it's like, did they see that and then write the Marvel part? You know what I mean? Like, we gotta do, you know what I mean? I'm not saying they made Ultron knowing what they were gonna do. I'm saying they looked back and did that, which they totally could have done. But that, it, all of this lends to, like, all of these movies since Winter Soldier, he's pretty much been non-existent.
Right.
And it's like in all of the different, like, there's, and we even mentioned after Infinity War, like, where was Fury this whole time? And then why is he only in the end credit scene?
Right.
Like, why are they just showing up at New York now? Why is he behind? So the theory is he's been off world for like 5 years, well, since 2014. And doing what, and we don't know what
he's doing.
We have no idea. I doubt it was a vacation,
right?
But maybe he's helping, like, and that's when.
Well, he says, "Let's get back to work" or something to the Skrulls when he comes out.
But that could have been a lunch break. I don't think they weren't working for the 5 years.
No, but what I'm saying is they're doing, like, there's a project or something that he's working on. We just don't know what it is. Now, I guess the question is there really a Maria Hill? Like, is she a real person? And if so, where is she? Like, where's the real Maria Hill? Because, the real Nick Fury's out in space. Is Maria Hill even a real person, or was she always a Skrull? Like, it raised a few questions, which I'm sure they'll answer.
It raised
going
a
forward,
ton.
But that's what I thought too. I was like, well, who the hell's? Where's Maria at?
So we could talk about that stuff probably in other podcasts coming up. But one of the reasons I wanted to mention it is, I don't know about you, the entire time through that movie, the first time I saw it, I felt like Samuel Jackson felt off to me. I felt like one of my criticisms watching that movie the first time was, I feel like he's not into this. Like, maybe he doesn't want to play Nick Fury anymore. And then you find that out at the end that he hasn't, and watch it a second time, I feel like a bunch of those scenes, I feel like now he's acting like Ben Mendelsohn.
Right.
And he, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't acting like Nick Fury. He was very short with people. He was like, he was yelling at Peter Parker at times, which Fury's
always kind of been that way. I don't know. He didn't feel off to me.
He's much cooler and smoother to me. Like, a regular Nick Fury is much more. He's much cooler. He's much smoother with dealing with people. And I felt like he was very short-tempered when dealing with, in this movie. When it's like, you know, like, think, in Winter Soldier, when he's like, I share. I'm good like that. But the way he delivered that line to Steve Rogers, and it's like, it was just so much smoother than the character that you got in this movie. So it just, I felt like that kind of like changed my entire perspective of that character in that movie. And the second time I watched it, it really brought a lot more depth to it, to the character for me, just watching him interact with people and stuff.
Right. I don't know. Like I said, he didn't feel off to me, so I didn't really pick up on any of it. Now, again, I've only seen it once, so I haven't gone back and watched it
right,
again.
Right, but that would be the time that he felt off.
Right.
That's when he felt off to me, was the first time I saw it. And then at the end, when you find out he's been a Skrull the whole time in this movie, you're like, wow, okay, well, that explained it to me. Because there was something weird. It just felt off to me.
Yeah.
And it just... And then when you find that out, I was like, wow. And then I asked my daughter, said the same thing. She was like, we had this huge conversation on the ride home. And my wife's like, yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah.
She goes, I don't pay this much attention.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like I said, it definitely raised a lot of questions for where we're going with Nick Fury and, you know, the Skrulls and, you know,
right.
Really what's going, because, you know, again, where there's a, I guess it really brings up a lot of concern about who's, you know, you've got Skrulls that are now running S.H.I.E.L.D., or I don't know what they call it.
Well,
it's not really S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, but, you know.
Well, that's the thing.
You know,
I
obviously,
think he's
they were taking direction from Fury, but, you know, is it setting up secret invasion? You know, again, we don't know what's going on, like how many Skrulls are running around and what they're doing. So...
Right, but they're not. It's not a secret invasion type thing. It's like they're here at the direction of Fury,
right?
And it's like, here, act like me, go down there and just get this stuff organized. And I thought that was a great line in the end credit scene with Talos saying, like, he's like, oh, what? How did I not see that coming with the technology and the artistry or whatever he's saying? He goes, that's so embarrassing for a shapeshifter.
Right.
which I thought was great.
It was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, which I just wanted to jump ahead to that.
I'll just say, yeah, since
a lot of the stuff in the movie, like I found that watching it a second time, you'll find stuff like when he first brings Peter in, when, Fury first brings Peter in, and he's introducing him to, well, Mysterio or what's his name,
Beck. Quentin, yeah,
yeah, and he's like, and Quentin's explaining where he's from. He goes, I'm from Earth such and such, and that's when you see Fury walk in the background. He goes, he's from Earth, he's just not from your Earth,
right?
Which is like, why didn't he say
our Earth? Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's little lines like that throughout the movie that give you the little hints along the way that he's not Fury.
Right.
And which is, it's kind of cool. There were a couple other ones, but I remember that one distinctly. There was another one that I heard the second time, and it was like a scene where they jumped in and it was him and Maria Hill walking down the sidewalk, and he says something, I think the line is something about like, you come in mid-conversation, and you just hear Fury go, like, he says something about Kree sleeper cells. What did you say? What are they doing? And then, he breaks off the conversation. So they're having a conversation about something with the Kree off-world or whatever that has nothing to do with what's going on there. That was another one. There's a lot of little things the second time you see it that I think you'll pick up on.
Yeah, well, obviously we weren't looking. I wasn't looking for those things the
exactly.
first time around, so I didn't really pick up on either one of those. But
what about in this one? Did you see the cat when they first showed up in Venice and they walked into that crappy hotel? It's like, when in Venice, your feet get soggy.
Yeah,
there was a cat sitting on the table. Was that cat Goose?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm wondering, I was like, because that would be like a foreshadowing that, you know, Fury would be there or, you know, Talos or whatever. I saw that. But, yeah, so anyways. So we were in the bar, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I guess since we've jumped to credits, I want to jump back to the first credit scene.
Going to get to that. We could do the rest of some
okay.
of the other stuff.
Well, I don't know. We're all willy-nilly. I don't know where we're going now. So.
We're always willy-nilly. Yeah.
Well, I guess, all right. So
it's our Peter Tingle.
It's kind of going back then. I think something that did kind of stick out to me that bugged me a little bit was, you know, so we find out, you know, we unravel all the plot with Quint, you know, Mysterio and all that. And, you know, we find out the, you know, they're all Stark employees or whatever. But you kind of get the sense that the brains behind most of the illusions is the, you know, the cat from Stark, you know, from Iron Man 1, you know, the dude with the glasses.
The guy, yeah.
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 He's behind the
guy
computer.
Guy behind the computer.
Right, and
right.
He's kind of really the mastermind with all the illusions. And Quentin was a little bit more, like, he's the actor, and he's the one that's kind of
right
out front. And, you know, but you kind of get the feeling, like, that the technology isn't really his thing, and, you know, obviously he's a smart guy because he was working for Stark, and he did create the illusion tech.
Right.
But, you know, the other guys around him were the ones that were really pulling it off. But then all of a sudden, he just jumps out there with this helmet, and he's like this master. Like, he was pulling off these illusions like crazy, like with Peter and, you know, once, you know, like you see.
Who was? Quentin was?
Quentin was, yeah.
Well, like, he wasn't. It was all done by, and this is one of the things I'm wondering, if in, like, did Quentin die? But they have his image on file. Are they going to bring him back? But it's actually kind of a Wizard of Oz spin,
well,
where the guy behind the computer is actually Mysterio.
Well, maybe so, yeah. And that,
you know what I
mean?
Yeah,
we like, can kind of get to that. I mean, I get where you're going with that, because that ties into the first credit scene, where obviously
right,
we know we're
also,
not done with Mysterio. But
right.
I guess my point was, like, that, you know, when he gets with Peter, like, when they start to kind of have that first showdown between Peter and Mysterio, and, like, Peter's stuck in all these illusions, like...
Right, when he gets kidnapped by Nick Fury.
Right,
but
what
which
I'm saying
is, a Mysterio
is like,
illusion.
All of a sudden, he's graduated from, I don't want to say basic illusions, but, you know, it was just these elemental guy. But now he's got Peter going through, like, this funhouse mirror of illusions that... It
right.
just seemed like he graduated awful quickly to being a master of that technology, where it didn't seem like he was that proficient with it just two scenes earlier when they were in the warehouse,
well,
and he's wondering why his hand is blippy. You know what I mean?
Well, he said it was like, he goes, oh, we'll have that cleaned up. Don't worry about
right,
it. They
but,
were working
but he,
on
but,
whatever's
right, but the other people were going to be doing that. They were the ones that were...
The other people do everything.
Right, but... But then it wasn't. It was Quentin, because he's the one that had the helmet on and he had the headpiece. Like, he was in charge of all those illusions once you got out into the field that he was fighting with Peter. Like,
no, I don't think he was.
I think he was.
No, he's just the actor doing the voice and doing the stuff. Because even in the final battle scene, he yells to whatever that guy's name was and says, shut down all illusions. Shut them all down.
Well, right, but he's
and
even
he, and,
like...
And that guy goes, I don't know how you're going to spin this one, but okay. So he shuts them all down for all intents and purposes, exposing Quentin instead of being Mysterio
right, but
now.
Then
he's
everything,
just that guy.
Right, but then everything that happens after that, Quentin's pulling that off. He's the one that's doing that stuff. Like, he still fooled Peter into thinking there was another body of him on the
yeah.
ground. There was, like, he, like I said, he was the one that was like, oh, I'm just going to kill him myself. Like, he was still out there.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I got the sense that he was pulling all that stuff off. Like, he was creating all those illusions where, you know, Peter was seeing himself falling through the, you know, the buildings and falling into the graves and changing costumes. And
see, I got the sense he was like a Ben Affleck as like a director and actor.
Well,
he was acting the scenes. He was directing it, but everybody, and then, I mean, you even have the wardrobe lady over, like, steaming the suit.
Well,
you know,
right.
It was an entire production team that created Mysterio, which is where I think if they bring Mysterio back in other movies, obviously Jake Gyllenhaal will be in it, but
right.
he's not, that character is dead.
Right.
But
it's
what you're
going to
be
illusion.
Playing is
right.
the, exactly, the Mysterio thing will be that Wizard of Oz type effect where it's just
right.
a guy behind a keyboard and all those drones. So
I don't know. Again, my take through the whole thing was that once they kind of got boots on the ground and it was like him out there in the world walking around with the technology
right.
that like he was orchestrating all the illusions.
Yeah.
And that brings me back to what I mentioned earlier when I was saying how I felt like the beginning of the movie was fairly predictable and I kind of saw what was coming. So then you get to the illusions And, like, Peter's, like, lost in all, basically lost in all of these illusions. He doesn't know what's real. And then all of a sudden, like, Fury, which turns out to be illusion, too, but Fury walks up behind Mysterio and knocks shoots him in the him. Head, or, you know, makes him unconscious.
Shoots him in the back, yeah.
And everything ends. And I was super mad and disappointed by that. Because, like, I was, I was super unfulfilled. Like, I was like, I can't believe that that's how they're going to end it, by Fury right. just walking up behind him and knocking him out. And then that turns into illusion, too. And I was like, that's right. awesome. You know?
Now, here's you and I being opposite.
Yeah.
I knew that was an illusion.
See, I didn't. I didn't at all.
And one of the things that really, like, when he backs him up, right, just before Peter gets hit by the train.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I knew this was all an illusion. And one of them was when Nick Fury crossed his arms in front of him, he crossed them the same way that Jake Gyllenhaal had been doing in the movie. And you never see Nick Fury cross his arms that way.
Yeah.
So it was, but everything leading up to then, I was like, this is another illusion. You and I are flipped.
Yeah.
It's like, I saw that one coming. I saw the other one coming. I was just buying in really hard.
I don't know. But like I said, it made me mad, actually. Like, for that 30
seconds. Yeah,
it didn't last long because, I mean, you found out.
Because he got hit by a train.
Yeah, you found out, like, 30 seconds later. But for that 30 seconds, I was, like, super unfulfilled. I was like, I can't believe that all. It's like
that's
that scene in Indiana Jones where, you know, the swordsman comes out and he pulls out the sword and Indy just, you know, pulls out his gun and shoots him, and it's kind of like very anticlimactic, and that's the kind of the way I felt this was. But then I was happy when it was, you know,
not
I got
over.
All energized again. Yeah, that it was, you know, because I kept thinking, but that happened awful quick in the movie. Like, there wasn't a whole lot to this Mysterio thing, but
all you gotta do is shoot him in the back.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I thought that was great. And honestly, they even got me the second time. Like, I didn't see when he was down on the ground, shot and pretending to be dying. They got me again because I thought that was him. Like, I didn't think that was an illusion either. And then,
oh, yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
then
that was a really good one.
You know, he shoots out the spider sense and stops the bullet or whatever. And I was like,
right.
What the hell? And then I was like, oh, shit, that was sorry, I'm bad today. I keep
That's
cursing.
Three times.
I know. I was like, oh, my God, it was another illusion. And I was like, they did a really good job. Like I said, once the movie got going, of keeping you kind of on your toes and guessing. Now, the downside is all those shocks are gone forever. Like, you only can ever see it the first time once. So,
yeah,
like,
but
you're not going to get
that.
The
second time, like, so that one where you think Beck is dead on the ground.
Right.
And the gun goes off near Peter's head.
Right.
The second time, you'll be ready for it, and you can actually, like, I was watching, it's pretty cool, and you'll see Peter reach for it and move out of the way.
Well, right, you might
it's
see like, other things coming.
Right,
but
it's really cool.
But kind of
it's,
that, you only get the first time through once. Like, all those, all those kind of, I don't want to say shocks, but I guess they're shocks. You know, you only, you're not going to get them the next time. But like you said, maybe you're going to pay more attention, and you'll catch other things. You know, on subsequent viewings. I mean, and obviously that can be said for any movie that you ever see. You only get the thrills once, you know, and then everything else is just appreciating what they did after that. But
so one of the scenes that I thought was something the two scenes I thought were, I don't know about groundbreaking, but I really, really enjoyed them, were the one you were just talking about, the first real Spider-Man Mysterio face-off when Spider-Man got kidnapped, and he's in that warehouse, and he's just running into walls. He thinks he's diving, and he's like a foot off the ground.
Right.
But the way they shot that, the way it sounded, and I say shot that because I know it's not cinema. I mean, it's all digital effects.
Right.
But the sound for that, just the whole entire scene, I thought that was – it was so well done, and it was so much fun to watch. It was like an amusement park ride.
Right. That's why I said it was like a funhouse mirror ride.
Exactly.
You know?
But then that final scene when he goes down that bridge tunnel thing that he's in with Mysterio, and that where he uses his Peter tingle to get – like and you see his – which is so great because – some incarnations in the movies, Spider-Man doesn't have the articulated eyes.
Right.
But they really, I mean, obviously it was so important here because he closed his eyes. It was like,
you keep saying Spider-Man, and really it's Night Monkey. I needed to correct you there because.
No. Actually, no, he was Spider-Man in this part. He had a suit on.
It's Night Monkey.
Night Monkey. But that scene when he, like, you see his eyes close, and you don't really see his eyes the rest of the way, but you get the impression that the entire way through, because of the smoke and everything, he's like, I'm going to go through here blindfolded, and I'm going to battle these bots,
right,
these drones, and they're, which are invisible anyways, and he's dodging. That scene was so much fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're watching him, you feel like you're part of him, almost like they did. Obviously, they're both Sony. Sony made the video game and this, and we'll get into that, the final scene when he's swinging through the city. But you actually felt like you were along for the ride.
Right.
In that scene of him dodging, you're like sitting in the theater and potentially moving your head.
Right.
Like, look out, here it comes. And it was just such, those scenes were so much fun and such a fun way to use those special effects. That's why I'm saying, like, I don't know of another scene that I can really compare that to. That's why I said I don't think it's groundbreaking per se, but
right. I just felt like, saying,
you know what I mean? It's like everybody uses special effects,
right,
but how do you use them? And I thought, and like, where in the story does it fit? And I thought what they did there was just so good for it just fits so perfect. And it was just so much fun to watch those scenes.
Right.
So, what did you think? All right, let's get off of that for a little bit. What did you think of MJ, that whole scene, MJ figuring out Peter Parker's Spider-Man?
Well, I mean, I think they
and their whole relationship, actually.
Right, well, they tipped that in the trailer, so, I mean, it wasn't a surprise because we'd already seen that happen.
No, I know that,
but,
yeah,
you know, well, it just kind of, again, goes back to, really, with any comic, you know, you can go to any comic book character, and if people were just smart enough to pay attention around them, everybody should figure out who every superhero is.
Oh,
because
of course.
The reasoning,
right,
that she gave is the same reasoning you could give for anybody else. But
right,
it just kind of went back to me.
Lois Lane?
Well, yeah, but
yeah.
Where I mentioned it when we were talking about Endgame. It's like the secret identities of these characters in the Marvel movies are the worst kept secrets in the world.
Right.
You know, like, everybody knows who everybody is. Like, he was so worried about showing up in Europe in his Spider-Man suit because he thought everybody was going to figure out who he is. Well,
right,
just putting on that Carnival mask didn't change the fact that you were wearing the same clothes that Peter Parker was wearing. He had
the
same backpack that Peter was wearing. Like, how the entire school didn't figure out that he was Spider-Man right then and there.
Right.
It was crazy. But, you know, you always kind of want the love interest to be involved. So, like, I was happy that she,
right,
you know, on the one hand, it's like, well, yeah, of course I want her to figure out that he's Spider-Man, and I want them, you know, to get together and blah, blah, blah. But you also just, you know, in the comics, they don't know somebody for 5 minutes and then give away their secret. Like, even in this movie, like, when Fury and him first get together and they go into, like, the little underground lab or hideout,
right,
or whatever, he's like,
his mask on.
He's like, but he's like, well, you could take your mask off because everybody in here already knows who you are. Well, it's like, well, why does like the random, you know, Italian truck driver, you know, that, why,
right,
does he know who Peter Parker is? You know, I get that maybe Fury and Maria Hill know, but why does Quentin Beck know who Peter Parker is? You know, it's like,
right,
they're just terrible secrets, you know?
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to what I said before. It's just the practicality of movies that, like, we want these actors to run around with their faces hanging out because we pay them a lot of money to be in these movies. But
yeah,
they take their masks off an awful lot, you know? So,
well, they need screen time.
Yeah. So,
what I liked out of the MJ Peter story arc here is, they flipped it from the comics, okay? So if you go back and watch Homecoming, Peter's, what was her name? What was his love interest in Homecoming? I forget her name.
I don't remember, but,
but, you know, Vulture's daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
But through that entire movie, MJ, which you don't know her name is MJ through the movie till the end, MJ is eyeing Peter through that entire movie. At times when they speak to her, she acts up.
Right.
And she has that, she's very standoffish. She makes fun of them. She acts very aloof, like she doesn't care about them. But there are scenes where she's watching him.
Right.
And she's interested in him. So they've kind of flipped the script on, in the comics, Peter has always been after MJ.
Right.
You know what I mean? Peter's always been watching her, and he's always been like, desiring her, where she never knew he existed. And now, in this incarnation, they've said, okay, Peter doesn't know who she is until this movie. And then but she's actually been interested in him the whole time.
Right.
And he didn't know that. And then, you know, he kind of likes her. He has this, that's the basis of the movie, is his grand plan.
Right.
And then she, you know, when they are confronting each other on the, outside the hotel, she's like, oh yeah, I was just watching you because you were Spider-Man. I thought you were Spider-Man, but she obviously was lying. But I thought that was a really cool flip right there, where they didn't do the same old story where Peter's in love and he's been pining for her. Right. And it's pretty cool how they flipped that around.
I thought the other thing too, that this really just kind of came to me. It didn't really come to me throughout the movie I was watching, but you know, when you started talking about how he had his plan and all that stuff, you know, for him and MJ. Yep. And now I think back to even in home, like we've never really gotten the full origin story for Spider-Man. Like we, you know, they touched on it in right. Homecoming, but we never really got that with great power comes great responsibility moment. Like there was really never an Uncle Ben or anything like that.
Right. We just jumped into his life.
Right. We just jumped in, but I thought he was a little out of character in this movie a lot of the times because he didn't have that. This sense of response, like he didn't really want to be there. Like he didn't want to get involved. He wanted to like put it off on others. Whereas like kind of previous incarnations of Spider-Man, he always had that heavy sense of responsibility and would never have really acted, would never have wanted to put it off on somebody else. Where in this one here, it was kind of like, you know, obviously he steps up. Like when the going gets tough, you know, he was all in, you know, and he did what he needed to do. But it was, there really was that whole interplay with him and Quentin that allowed Quentin to get into his head in the first place.
Right.
Was because he was saying, well, just back off and be a kid and don't get involved and just go have your school trip. And
that was one of my notes for summary is that, Homecoming, the entire movie is him trying to get a hold of Happy because he wants the next mission.
Right.
It's like every text, remember they showed his text.
Right.
And he's like, I want the next mission. When's the next mission? When's the next mission?
Right.
And then by the end of the movie, he turns down the role of the Avengers. Right. He grew as a person, right? He gets eventually, obviously we see he gets his next mission, which is the entire Infinity War Endgame saga. And so this movie is the exact opposite.
Right.
He just wants that up. He got blipped. He just wants a summer to be a kid.
Right.
And even Aunt May says, you deserve this vacation.
Right. But then she packed her suit.
Right. You know? Well, I think she packs the suit as a mother would, like, I want you to be safe.
Right.
It's like taking the suit away from you, you're less safe than when you have the suit.
Right.
So I get that part. It's not like she's like, you need to be Spider-Man. She's like, I think she knows that when you're in the suit, you're a little safer than you're not in the suit.
Right.
So either way, you're still Spider-Man. But yeah, I thought that was a fun, another little flip on the two movies, on the two Spider-Man movies. You have two different versions of Peter Parker. One really wants to get into the next mission. And then this movie, clearly he wants nothing to do with the mission. Is like, look, you guys can do this on your own. Can I not save the world right now? Right. And I think that was literally
the line.
He says,
right, I didn't know I was going to be saving the world this summer or something like that.
I thought I was going to get this summer off.
Right.
You know, it's like, because literally this is the third summer in a row.
Right.
He's had to save the world. So that's, I thought that was fun. And you're right. It's like, it's a departure from the normal Peter Parker.
Right.
With great power comes great responsibility. He just wanted a vacation, which we all go on vacation. When
we
go on vacation, the best part is you leave responsibility behind.
No, you're right.
So,
you're right. It's
you know
just
what
something
I mean?
That
and,
it was a little character. We just never really seen that Spider-Man portrayed quite that way.
And that's you know? Part of the title.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a play on words. It's
right.
Far From Home.
Right.
So this is like all of these characters are different characters.
Right.
They're far from what we're used to, Far From Home. This entire movie is based on illusions. It's, I mean, the depth of this movie is like, I mean, we can, I'm loving this movie. I'm right. Like I said, after the second time I saw it, I was like, I like it even more now, right, a second time. And it's like, there's so much, you know, when it comes out on Blu-ray, am I gonna be as, you know, cause, you know, are you gonna fade a little bit, you know, recency bias right now, right, but you think of all the things we've just been talking about that, I mean, it's just like, and now, all right, we gotta talk about this part. When they're hovering over the tulip fields, which that was a riot.
Yeah.
He's like, we've been hovering over tulip field for 15 minutes. Right. But when he finally becomes Peter Parker, goes back into like, all right, I'm going to kick ass.
Right.
And when he starts messing around with the tech,
right,
and building his suit and the whole I love Led Zeppelin line.
Yeah,
that was a riot.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, that was, I cracked up, but on a personal note, I really, really love that part. I get the homage to Tony Stark of him putting his hand in the glove and stuff. But when he was talking about, he goes, okay, my web shooters, give me my web shooters. So they pull up the web shooters and he starts pulling things and he's like, my web shooters. Okay, here, I need this in my web shooter. I need this kind of web. I need blah, 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 blah. I need explosives, but I need them timed. I need to be able to set them off on my, and just that it's, I don't even know if we got full sentences out of him.
Right.
But that to me was, it brought me so back to when I was a kid, and that was Peter Parker, the scientist. He'd lose the battle. He'd go back, mess with his web solutions. Like, oh, well, I'm fighting, you know, I'm fighting the fire guy or something that deals with fire. It's like, and I'm going to, you know, I'll put asbestos in my web slinging or something, you know, and then he'd go back in the final battle. His webs would work again.
Right.
And it's like, I love that part of that whole him building his stuff and getting back into hands-on tech of his own.
Right.
He's in control of his own equipment.
Right.
So
like I said, the suits, that's a little bit of a departure for me because I don't like the ultra techie suits. Like, I'm much more a fan of Spider-Man just in his underwear. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like you know what I mean? Like the long johns, the spandex costume. Like, I don't like the super teched out
underoos.
Yeah, Spider-Man suits. And I mean, I get that they've happened in the comics too. Like, I know the Iron Spider suit's been in the comics and, you know, all that stuff. But I don't like when he relies so much on the tech, because he's never really had to, you know, yes, the science of the webs is one thing, but it's never really been about technology. He's never really been the one that's had the AI in his suit and all that stuff. And that was my big criticism with Homecoming, and it wasn't as much in this one, but that part of what you were just talking about, and I didn't dislike it, but that's where it goes a little bit away from Spider-Man for me, because I don't like that when he relies so much on the technology of the suit.
Right.
You know, just the whole, you know, I have my spider, my Peter Tingle, and I have my webs, and I have my spandex,
and that's why I referenced the webs.
Yeah.
He's always messed with his webs.
Right.
Because he invented that.
Yeah.
And that I've always liked.
Yeah.
But you're right. I'm not a big fan of, like, the Iron Spider suit.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of that. I don't like the arms coming out from the back.
Right.
I don't like that stuff. That's not the Spider-Man I knew.
Right.
But I do like seeing him mess with his webs and stuff. And
yes,
it's like, that's something that was missing from the Sam Raimi where it just came out his wrists.
Right.
I didn't like that. But it's like, that's the part that I like. And the music, you know, Led Zeppelin playing in the background was really good. So we've already talked about the final battle. The coded message I had, when Happy sent the coded message.
Yeah, no, I didn't understand it. Like, I don't really know what it meant, but
I think the idea, there were two codes in there because they picked certain things. So one of them was things don't seem what they are, you know, things aren't what they seem, which I think they were making fun of him. Like when Fury finally said to him, he's like, why didn't you just wink into the camera?
Right.
Like you basically, that wasn't a code.
Right.
You're just basically shouting it. But what he did say was he mentioned a surfboard.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
Is it a future, something about what the heck? Fireworks going off.
Yeah, what is 4th of July?
Can you hear him?
I can. Wow. Yeah.
So I'm just making sure it wasn't somebody outside my house shooting at me. you're running long. Yeah. No, is it Silver Surfer?
Well, it could be.
Wouldn't that be funny? Like, he's like, coded message in the toilet. We found a surfboard in your and it was a like reference to Silver Surfer coming down.
Well, that's
the
what I thought. You know, obviously when you hear surfboard, that's probably the first thing you think of. But
yeah,
I didn't really know what that was code for. But anyway, yeah, that whole thing was cool. But I mean, again, you kind of knew that was going on, that they were sending, you know, somehow sending messages back and forth. But yeah, I can't decipher the message. I don't really know what it meant. So
yeah. So I guess the last thing we have is the Peter Parker end credit scene being outed.
Well, yeah, so there was the two things I wanted to bring up in that, obviously that was a big thing, that a big dangling storyline that we're probably going to get answered in the next Spider-Man movie, but I love the fact that
I would hope
we've now kind of crossed, we've crossed the streams with J. Jonah Jameson, because J.K. Simmons is back as Jonah, who we've seen in other iterations of Spider-Man.
Yeah, Raimi's.
Yeah, so I thought that was awesome. Like, I love the fact that they got him back as Jonah. But did you also notice that the first credit scene in both movies ends with somebody saying, "What the F?"
Yes.
Which I thought was awesome. I was like, well, that can't be a coincidence either.
Nope.
But yeah, so you kind of wonder, you know, now the whole world, I guess, knows that Spider-Man is Peter Parker, you know.
Right,
so.
And that was in the books.
Yeah.
There was an iteration of that in the books.
Right.
So how are they going to...
I don't know how they're going to get out of that, but...
Well, I was reading... It popped up on Twitter, an article about Charlie Cox, but it was from a few months ago. Okay, this was an article where Charlie Cox was at a Comic-Con, and he was like, "Would you like to reprise the role?" Like they're always asking him of Daredevil, and he's like, "I would love to." He goes, "But my favorite thing to do would be to to get in with into Spider-Man."
Yeah,
and he would love to work in that movie. He wants to, you know, but. He's like, they told me not to speculate. They tell me not to do these things. But one of the things they talked about was how Peter Parker covered for Daredevil in a courtroom scene. I think it was from 2001, 2002 or something. They mentioned the book. But it was like, look, Matt Murdock can't be Daredevil because there's Daredevil.
Right.
But the guy in the suit was Peter Parker.
Right.
What if they flip it?
Yeah, they could do something.
And that would be, but that was an article from months ago, and they didn't know this movie was coming out. Maybe he did.
Well, it
I don't
may
know.
Not be Matt Murdock, but it could be some. Sooner or later, they're just going to have Spider-Man and Peter Parker in the same room together. You know,
exactly. And that's, exactly. You know. And who's going to be that person?
Well, we got a whole bunch of shapeshifters on on the ground. So
that, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think more. I mean, I would love to see him bring in Charlie Cox, but I think more likely it's just going to be a Skrull. You know, pretending to be Peter Parker, and
right,
you know, so.
Oh yeah, you could, and that would be a shame, though.
Well,
because that's such an easy way.
It's
like,
an easy
imagine,
way out.
Like,
right,
we're all anticipating. How do they handle this? How do they handle this? Knowing there's a whole story in the comic books about this,
right?
And then they start the next movie and they explain it away in the first 5 minutes with a Skrull,
right? Well, yeah, I mean,
you're like, hey,
obviously it's the low hanging fruit, but I mean,
it's.
I don't know. It's definitely a way they could go. They're more clever than I am, so I'm sure they'll come up with something better than that. But, I mean, I figured that out in 2 minutes, so I'm sure there's a way they could do it.
Yeah, I want a more creative way.
Yeah.
But, all right, so I'd love to keep going, but let's wrap it up with, where do you rank this in your MCU?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, obviously, it still falls short of Endgame and Infinity War for me.
Oh, but I thought Endgame was
Well, don't get me going on that again. We've already talked about that. They're my co-number ones. But I don't know. Like I said, I still like Civil War. Not Civil War. Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think this is better than Homecoming.
Yeah, I do too. I think it has way more depth. It's way more fun.
Yeah.
I just...
It's definitely more fun. Again, there's a little bit of recency bias because I just, you know, we just watched it. But
that's what recency bias is.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying. No, it's
I have Homecoming right now. I have Homecoming 6th.
Yeah.
And it's below I have Endgame 1, Infinity War 2. I have Avengers 3, Iron Man 4, Winter Soldier 5, then Homecoming.
Right.
And then, but then when I look at it, after that I have Civil War, then Ragnarok, Captain Marvel. But when I look at this, like, Homecoming for me was that high because I love Spider-Man.
Right.
But if I'm being honest, I really don't think it's... I'm not sure if it's that much better than Captain Marvel.
Homecoming.
But
for sure,
for me,
not,
I just love Spider-Man.
I love Spider-Man too, but Homecoming isn't a top 10 for me. Like, I don't think it breaks the top 10 for me. This one, I think, does break the top 10, but I don't think it's top 5.
Right.
You know.
So this is what I wanted to get to. So before Far From Home, I had Homecoming at 6.
Right.
Now that Far From Home comes out,
Homecoming
I want to
put 10.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's exactly what I was going to say, because I needed Spider-Man to be up that high because I love Spider-Man.
Right.
And I just so wanted Spider-Man to be in the MCU that I was like, yeah, that was the best Spider-Man movie. It's up there. Right. Right. Well, now I have another Spider-Man movie,
yeah,
which I think is better than that. So I put that one up there. And I may put it ahead of Winter Soldier. I don't know, though, because I really like Winter Soldier. So let's just say I drop it in at 6, but now I take Homecoming, and I'm like, sorry, buddy, I'm dropping you down to boom, boom, boom.
Right.
I've got it probably, literally, if I drop it in right now, I'd be taking it out and putting it, I have Captain America First Avenger at 11. I'd probably put it after that.
Yeah.
And it's like, but then I'd have Far From Home at, that would put Far From Home at 6.
I still think, you know, again, I really like this movie, but I still think it comes in behind both, you know, Infinity War and Endgame. It comes in behind Winter Soldier, and it also comes in behind Guardians 1. So it's maybe 5, and if I thought really hard, it may be 6 or 7. So, I mean, it's a top 10 movie. I really like it, but I don't think it cracks. It might not crack the top 5 for me.
Right.
So, that's just, say, you know, as much as I like, and that just goes to show, again, how good all these movies are. We've said it a million times, but, like, yeah. I really, really like this movie, but it might not crack the top 5 or the top 10. So,
yeah, it's
hard to,
yeah,
you know.
What's funny is, yeah, Spider-Man Far From Home now, I just redid my list. Spider-Man Far From Home, I have at 6, so it doesn't crack the top 5. And then Homecoming is at 11,
yeah,
so it's right out. That one's outside the top, right, 10.
Because I think I might
like
even like Ragnarok.
These are all
more,
great,
you know,
movies.
I mean, just because Ragnarok was so much fun, like, I don't know.
Yes.
I might even put that ahead of it.
Well, I have Ragnarok at 8.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Civil War is at 7. So, yeah, it's... But it depending on the day, I could pick up and shuffle it.
Well, I said that with 1, 2, and 3 between, you know, Winter Soldier and then both Endgame movies, you know, both Avengers, yeah, movies. I could flip them all on any given day depending on my mood. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I still have Incredible Hulk at 23.
Yeah, there you go.
I feel bad for the movie that goes under that.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's... I mean, and I enjoy Incredible Hulk, but even I don't watch that one a lot.
Right.
I'm not really drawn to it. I really don't feel a lot for that movie. I didn't, but it's still down there.
Right.
You're like, oh yeah, that one. But all right. So that it?
Yep. I think so.
All right. I'm sure we missed a ton because I know there's a lot I want to talk about,
yeah,
still. But, all right, and I got fireworks or I'm getting shot at here.
Yeah, well,
so.
I got dinner on the table, getting cold, so.
Oh, good for you, good for you. All right, hey, like last week, anything we missed or we're wrong on, hit us up on Twitter at @brightside_chat. Email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, a whole bunch of things.
Everywhere.
everywhere. And where are we on Facebook?
Facebook.com/brightsidechat.
All right. You go eat dinner. I'm going to go try not to get shot.
I'm going. All right.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors who we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listen to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.